Okay, well, it's almost 1:05 here, Central Standard Time. We're going to go ahead and start our meeting. I'm David Knight with Project JFK CSI Dallas, and along with my co-host, Casey Quinlan. Brian Edwards can't join us today, but he's here in spirit. So first thing I want to do is kind of talk about a few things on the to-do list here that I've made myself. So the first thing I'm going to do is do a quick screen share. All right. This is our website, projectjfk.com, which I'm sure many of you have already visited. I would like to point out that under the events tab, you'll find here in the red section our next upcoming event, which will be in 4 days. This is Project JFK CSI Dallas Presents on the Trail of Truth and JFK Assassination, the Spotlight Series with special guest David Denton. It's going to be this Wednesday, August 25th, 2021, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, virtual event on Zoom, and he's going to be talking about his presentation is titled Coup d'Etats in America, What Do the JFK Files Tell Us? Part one is going to be Dulles, Hunt, Morales, and Harvey in the new documents. Part two is going to be Cuban exiles and their connections. Part three is Axie and military connections. And part four is coup d'etats in America from 11/22/63 to 1/6/21. So again, if you have not signed up for your e-ticket, please click on the Eventbrite button over here, and it'll take you to the portal. You can sign up for your event or for your free ticket. And again, the date is going to be Wednesday, August 25th from 6 to 9. I do want to say that the replays of our Spotlight series, our first one was Dr. John Newman, of course, June 23rd and 24th. And we just wrapped up earlier this month with Bill Simpage. He did his Spotlight on August 4th, and you can see the replay here. You can see it here on the website. And then also something that Bill did differently was he had virtual handouts. Those have all been actually renamed now, thanks to Bill sending me an email. Thanks, Bill. With the new titles, the documents are still the same if you've already downloaded them, but there are new titles to them. You can also view the chat log, and then the MP3 downloads are right over here. Pardon me. So if you want to download it and take it to go, you're more than welcome to. So again, that's kind of what's going on with our events. I see that Larry has joined us. Hi, Larry. I'm going to give you a second here, but I want to show you a surprise. You now have a presence on our website. Everybody that wants to know things, click on the blog tab, and there's our friend. There's Larry. Anything that Larry sends us that are pertinent to documents. He just wrote a letter to President Biden. This would be yesterday, August 20th. And if you click the download tab, it will take you to the letter that was written. This one here is a 17-page letter. It will not automatically download, but if you do want to download a copy, just go up here to your little download button, click it, and you'll have your own copy. In just a second, I'm going to turn it over to Larry so he can tell us about this letter and what the plan is, why he wrote it, what's in it, and where he's going to be going at from here. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and stop sharing, and I'm going to turn it over to Larry. Go ahead, Larry.
Okay. Thanks, David. Can you see me?
Yep, we can see you.
Okay, great. So the letter was a work product of a number of attorneys who we've mentioned in the past, and we sent it to the president yesterday after a summer of edits and working, and also we've been having some back channels with some of the people in the White House and at the National Archives. So the letter is essentially asking the president to order the executive agencies, particularly the CIA and the FBI, to release all of the JFK records, except for those that are truly, truly presenting a risk of identifiable harm to national security, which is a very high test. And also to have those, the explanation for any records that are postponed to be done on a site document by document basis, and to have that explanation published in the Federal Register, which is what the statute requires. The next important date under the order that the President Trump had issued in April of 2018 is September 26th. That's the date when the archivist is supposed to send the president his recommendations for the postponed records, whether, you know, which ones are to be released, if there are any postponements that are being requested. So the magical date, September 26th. We are asking anyone who is interested in this topic to call the White House. The phone number is 202-456-1414. You can call as many times as you like. ask the president, in a phone call, we're trying to recreate, obviously we won't be able to recreate the effects of a movie, but we're trying to recreate the situation that happens in 1991 with the Oliver Stone movie. So we would would ask you to spread the word to your friends. We're basically saying time to release the hounds. So we want people to call the White House, ask them to tell them that you want the president to release the records. We want to start creating public pressure, making it harder for them, easier for them to release the records than to make it, than to hold them back. and now the reality is that Congress in Washington right now is somewhat obsessed with either the infrastructure budget or what's going on in Afghanistan, then we're going to have the 9/11 events. I think the maximum effectiveness will be after 9/11 and before September 26th, but certainly doesn't mean you can't start calling now. But we're going to also launch a media effort as well, but we're going to wait till after 9/11 because the media is not going to pay attention until then. We have been told informally that there have been requests for postponement and that the National Archives is still shut down because of COVID and they have severe staffing constraints. So the odds are that there will not be a complete release, even if there were no requests for postponement. We have been asked informally to come up with a list of priority documents to be given to the White House for consideration. That's like sort of a dual-edged sword because on the one hand, we're kind of letting them know what documents are really important that they may not want to release. But on the other hand, there are new people, there's a new person that's at the NSC. That person's going to be the point person internally for working with the CIA and working with the president to make the decisions. He is brand new to this. He doesn't even know much about the JFK Act. That's a good thing. So we're taking it on that it's a good faith request. And so we're going to spend the next week or so coming up with a list. Jeff Morley's working on it. Rex is working on it. If anyone has any ideas, I see Joseph just sent a chat. Please send it to me, and we'll put them together. And then, I don't know how we're going to go from there. We still have to talk about it, but we'll come up with a list and provide it to the president. So just to prepare everybody, there's likely not going to be a complete release, just on grounds of COVID. Now, if Bart's on the phone, he's probably going to use a British term for that description. something stronger than rubbish. but that's what we're told. So that's sort of the state of play. And what we're going to do once we get past 9/11, we also want to remobilize an effort with Carolyn Maloney to try to get Congress to hold an oversight hearing before September 26th to hear from the archivist about, you know, how the agencies are complying with this request. Now, you know, the September 26th date was established by President Trump. Everything that we're dealing with right now is like, it doesn't comply with the statute. President Trump came up with this date. So, you know, President Biden could decide that they need another 6 months and do another postponement. We're kind of past the statutory deadline. So we're trying to do, you know, put as much pressure. We're going to do a media campaign. We're just going to try to do as much pressure to get as much documents out. And the role you guys can play is start calling the White House. I will also send David the phone number for the House Congressional Oversight Committee. I'm going to send Carolyn Maloney a follow-up letter next week, enclosing this letter to the president and asking her to hold a hearing before September 26th. Once that goes up, then you can start calling her as well. But please get your friends, everyone, start calling the White House. Make it known to the White House that this is an important issue. Obviously, there's a lot of noise right now to try to get through, so we need lots of phone calls. I did file a FOIA request. So we don't know if we're going to actually see the recommendation that the archivist makes to the president. The actual document, like the one that was made in March of 2018, we have never seen that. I did put a FOIA request in for it, and that was denied under the deliberative process exception. So we're going to pursue that. We have to appeal that denial now administratively, and if that does not result in any release of records, then Mark Zaid, who is on our team, is going to help us file a lawsuit. So, but we're going to hold off on lawsuits for this request until, you know, we get a response. It seems like we know that NARA is, the people at NARA are on our side. They would like to release these records, but they don't have the ability to if the CIA is the one that says don't release it, right? I mean, they could try to urge and work with the agency, but the agency says no. At the end of the day, they have to make a recommendation to the president, either overrule the CIA or agree with the request. So NARA doesn't have any authority, but the people are on our side. The Public Interest Declassification Board also was interested in this release, and they're working with NARA to try to help this process also. When you look at the letter, you will see names that you might be surprised on there, like, you know, people that support the Warren Commission findings. What we wanted to do is make it clear to the White House, this is a nonpartisan, everyone that is interested in the Kennedy assassination, regardless of their position, wants the records released. And when you call, this is not about conspiracy. This is not about trying to figure out who killed the president. This is simply about complying with the JFK Act. So you're asking the president, call the president, say, please release the records to comply with the JFK Act, the records, you know, JFK Records Act. Nothing else. And that's why we have this broad coalition of people that agreed to sign the letter. Judge Tunheim, who was the executive director of the ARB, he did not sign this letter because he's sending his own letter. So we're hoping that the combination of his letter and our group letter, and then I understand that Rob Blakely is going to be doing a op-ed piece in the Washington Post, and the person that's working with him, I asked him to wait till after 9/11 so it has maximum effect. So I think that's, if anyone, people have questions, the letter's going to be, should be at the White House now. So you can feel free to call, probably wait till Monday because people aren't going to be around this weekend, but start calling the White House. Again, the number is 202-456-1414. That's the switchboard, and tell them that you want to leave a comment for the president.
I will. Perfect, Larry. And, you know, I want to make sure that we send a thank you out to you and your team for doing the hard work that you're doing, especially on the legal basis of getting the government to actually do what, you know, should have already been done by now, which is release the documents. Whether it's, you know, conspiracy, anti-conspiracy, whatever. I really appreciate the fact that, you know, you went with the bipartisanship of it, of having both sides, so that way, you know, it's not just, they don't look at it and just dismiss it as, you know, these are, you know, the crazies or those guys that want to know.
Exactly. And Andrew Iller, who, you know, is one of the people on the team, he could not sign the memo because his law firm has some interactions with the federal government, but I wanted to give him a shout out as well. You know, you won't see, he signed a letter, but it's a letter and then a memo attached to it. But I wanted to give him a shout out because he and Mark did a heavy load on pulling together the memo. We were like a little law firm. So they did a lot of heavy lifting, and I just wanted to give a shout out to them as well. I believe they might be doing a podcast today with somebody. So let's get the word out and call the White House.
Absolutely. And, you know, with us having shows that we have and at meetings and online presences, that's one thing that I'm sure, you know, 58 years ago, they didn't bargain for the fact that, you know, we would have a platform and a voice to stand up and demand what they should be doing for us. You know, it's only right to, you know, to release the information. It's our information, you know, so we should have access to it.
And the way that was done in 2018 and 2017 did not comply with the law. We're letting them know also with the memo that we know what was done. This whole thing was orchestrated, and that you know, we're not gonna sit by and let them do something illegally this year. So we gave them a memo, kind of a little presumptuous to tell the president this is what we think the law is. But, you know, because we have a new personnel involved, we thought that, you know, sometimes the first person that gets the thought in the person's mind is the one that, so we wanted to basically, this is what the law says. You can look at it, but now as you're looking at it, you got our memo in the back of your head. So, anyway, David, thanks for the opportunity to let people know about this. And, everyone that's on the call, I expect to see, hear that there's 25 phone calls on Monday to the White House.
Yeah, everybody needs to do their part. And again, that number was
202-456-1414.
Okay, everybody, write that down.
David, if you could put that number on the website,
I absolutely will.
Okay.
Yeah, good. I absolutely will. And also, any of the letters, like the Carolyn Maloney letter. That Larry spoke about in previous sessions here on the show, and then also those are on the, again, ProjectJFK.com's website in the blog section. That's where we're going to keep Larry at. And also that's another section to where anybody else out there that wants to, you know, share something with the researchers that go to our website. It'd be I'm kind of in the process right now of adding a few extra sections and changing a couple things around to make it, you know, more user-friendly. I think our website's pretty user-friendly. The comments I get from it, there's a lot of information there for people to get on, and the average person usually spends between an hour to, you know, 2 hours on our website at a time. So that always helps us out. And again, I do want to I want to step in here and talk about two more things before I let Casey have the floor. So if you get a chance to if you have a pen and paper right now, you want to write this down. Details will be coming out within the next week to 2 weeks. Me and the Brain Trust here, Casey and Brian, were working on details, but November the 13th, November the 14th. Of this year is going to be our next virtual conference. It's only going to be a 2-day event. It's going to be from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. The cost will be around $60 for adults, $40 for students. Like I say, the details, speaker lists, and all that will be released on our website and we'll be talking about that in future Journey meetings. But I just want everybody to know, I did see that, you know, CAP is having a conference. I don't know if it's going to be in person or if it's going to be virtual, or who it's going to be open to. I know that Judith Baker is going to have one again this year. I don't know about Lancer yet.
Lancer sent something out about, you know, keep in touch, or, you know, stay tuned. We're going to have some sort of announcement.
Right. Yeah, I know that usually she announces things sooner than now, but again, I don't know what she's having, but, you know, of course, I just want to let everybody know that you know, those are conferences that are coming up, and you can always go to their websites and check them out. And like I say, ours is going to have details here pretty quickly, what we're going to be doing. And the other thing I wanted to do was send a quick shout out. Share the screen here again. Do a quick shout out on our home tab. We have the Help Our Cause, where people can go on and donate through PayPal. You can use PayPal or any of your major credit cards. But the list that we have so far, of course, Larry Snaff, Brooks LaPlante, Rick Bucarelli, Russ Baker, J. Gary Shaw, Alan Cohen, and Bruce Towers. You donate to us and help the cause, your name goes up on the wall. So it's a good cause, I think, that we do. This money is not used to pad our pockets. What it's used for is to continue research, getting equipment to do archiving of documents, files, basically keeping the lights on and bringing the information. I don't want to say entertainment, but sometimes our stuff can be highly entertaining. But anyway, if you want to donate, it can be big, it can be small. You know, give till it hurts, not sound like the old Jerry Lewis telethons, but the opportunity to go on there and you know, pass a little bit of dinero our way so we can keep doing what we do. With that, I'm going to turn it over now to Casey Quinlan. He's got a few things he'd like to talk about. So go ahead, Casey, take it away.
First of all, can you see me and can you hear me?
Yes, we can see you. We can hear you.
Okay.
Better if we just heard you.
Yeah, I know, Larry.
And you look like the older version of Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees now. But
that's all right.
Still...
I got my drumsticks in the back room there. Come on. But first of all, I want to give a couple shout-outs to Larry Schnapp and also Bill Simpage, because I read this book in probably about 2 weeks. But and the reason I read it in 2 weeks is because I took an hour at a time to read it. But at the same time, it gave me some very good background information. And for those of you who haven't read it, the very best, man, it talks about the early CIA, and it gives you a very good insight. There are some howevers that I could argue with, but I don't want to get into that. But it is an excellent book to read, and it gives you some very, very good background of who the CIA was immediately after World War II and into the 1960s. So thank you guys again for this. And again, it gives you kind of an idea when I read a book, I really rip it apart. Holy cow. These are all the most important facts that are in the book, and I've got, my wife says, is there anything in the book that's not important? I said, well, it is an important book, but that's just one book that I'm reading. But that's the very best, man, and thank you guys. Shout out for you guys. Thanks, Larry. I appreciate that. Another book that I am rereading again, because I'm in contact with Pete Hyman's. Pete Hyman's got a hold of me and said that he knows personally, this Edward Griffin, who wrote the book The Creature from Jekyll Island, and it goes into the second look at the Federal Reserve. Now, there have been a number of people that said that the Federal Reserve killed JFK. Well, I'm not looking for it for that, but just the background and the information about how the Federal Reserve was formed, not according to our history books, but according to this book, and you've got some very good documentation in. And this is a book that this my third reading on here, but trying to get through all the other books. But The Creature from Jekyll Island, holy cow. Then I want to point out, again, Doug Horne's brand new book, the McCollum memorandum. Doug's really spent a lot of time on this, and I like how Doug writes. It's very simple to read because I'm a simpleton, and I need to go back and reread it and mark things down. But this is, it gives you a background of 1940 and 1941 as to the documentation and the meetings that were held just prior to the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And asked the question, did Roosevelt know? And I'll let you guys take a look at this, but I think Doug does a super job of getting into this. And it's a book that's probably about, let me double check, it's about 450 pages long. So the McCollum Memorandum, Story of Washington, D.C., 1940-1941. And I got to give a plus-plus call out to one of my mentors, Gary Shaw. Gary told me a long time ago to get this book. It's Brandy. It is the portrait of an intelligence officer, Frank Brandestetter. And I just got it in the mail because they were out of them on Amazon. Good God, I'll tell you what, if Amazon doesn't have it, then nobody has it. But it just came in the mail. So this is another 500-page book that I'm reading. But the first chapter that I turned to was the ACSI, ACSI, that John Newman was talking about. And I am sure that Professor Denton is going to mention the next 4 days about his information and the documentation that's coming out of the archives about ACSI and the information on that. So Brandestetter is a Dallas person. He's a colonel. And I'm trying to figure out, I usually don't go to the end of the book, but I think he's still alive. So,
oh no, Brandy died years ago.
He did?
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, there are two books about Brandy, and I've gone through them extensively, and they're both very important to read because they have completely different interpretations of them. Yet both of the books appear to have been written by insiders who seem to have had some sort of an agenda of creating an institutional history for the service itself. So they kind of hide a lot of stuff in plain sight. Very tricky to read them and figure out what's really going on, but both those books are good.
All right. Is this Russ talking?
Yes.
Okay, Russ. Yeah, I appreciate that. And you've gone through both books already?
Many times, yes.
Okay, good. Well, like I said, I've had this on back order, and they finally sent it to me, and my wife says, where are all these books coming from? And I said, Larry Schnapp sent it to me. So.
Great.
All right, the last book that I want to put out is this one here. It's called God, School, 9/11, and JFK. And I got this book sent to me by Bruce DeTorres, and I think Bruce is online today. And I also want to point out to David, we need to get his name on there because he made a donation to our website. And again, thank him and all the rest of the people who have donated these books. But this is it's a condensed book about God, school, and as a school teacher, holy cow, he couldn't have hit it right on the head, especially about school. But I can't talk about that in any of my schools because I'd be thrown out. And, of course, like a lot of you guys, anytime you mention either anything about 9/11 or JFK, we've been thrown out and branded as a communist pinko. But anyway, it says, God, school, 9/11, and JFK, the lies that are killing us, and the truth that sets us free, which sounds a little bit like the CIA, but that's okay. He hits a lot of very, very good heavy points in here, and his second to the last chapter is COVID-19, and it's interesting to see where all of this may have started. So, again, promoting that book for Bruce. And
hey, Casey, you should invest in that.
What now?
You should be having stock in that company that is that sells those post-its.
Oh, absolutely. Those. Good Lord. I run out all the time, and I'm sitting there going, I can't read anymore, and my post-it's not here. Well, and, you know, like any type of researcher, I've got books on my library shelf right now that are underlined, highlighted, but I've got them earmarked, and it's just one of those things. And I just step back and I go, there's got to be an easier way. So
to be honest, I have the same approach with magic markers. I have four different colors I use depending on, you know, the first through is like yellow, then it goes, I think, green, or I mean blue, and then it gets to pink. You know, I keep getting further and further refined.
God forbid that I would give this to John Newman, because John Newman would find something in it and he'd say, hey, it's been misfiled for the last 30 years. When I first met John Newman, that's what he told me. He says, we're just looking for how the Vietnam War started. And he says, good God. He says, we found files in there on JFK that were misfiled. And I'm not so sure if most of the files on JFK haven't been misfiled. But anyway, I want to give a shout out to you guys. Thank you very much for keeping me in reading, and also keeping a couple companies alive with the number of trees that we're cutting down that we all have to read. There are some other books coming out. I'm not going to mention any of those right now, but there are some other books. If you guys get online, and there's some reputable people that are writing these books, and I've heard that some of them are going to come out in October, November, December, but keep online with those, and if I don't get them first, I'm sure you guys probably will also. Again, I do want to mention the number of people that donated to our program and to our website. It's a thing that I wish that several people had access to some of these people's names that would donate it to us on some sort of an X amount of dollars. But I know they all want some sort of a tax deduction on that, and that would be great. But at the same time, we're trying to keep under the radar as much as we possibly can. But at the same time, all three of us are working, and even at age almost 72, I'm still working. But I got a job where I can read part time on the job, and then I go into the secretaries that I have to talk to and ask them about JFK. And right now the big topic is Afghanistan. I guess the bad part about that is I am a Vietnam veteran, and it's one of those things where when they start talking about Vietnam, they start talking about Afghanistan, I'm saying you do not want to ask me about this. You don't, because if you do, I'm going to throw it right back in your face and everybody out there. And I said, we shouldn't have been in Vietnam, and we shouldn't have been in Afghanistan. But I said, that's just my own opinion. But as we're trying to figure out what in God's name is going on right now, well, I don't know. Are we really trying to make the world, the United States of the world? Because if that's what we're doing, then we probably should never have pulled out of Afghanistan or any other country that we got into from the 1940s on. But again, I don't want to get into that, but I just want to point out to you that as a veteran, it irks me. And I know we lost a lot of troops over there. We males, females, and even some of the people that are over there now. I asked my wife, I said, do you think the president got good information from his intelligence sources in the military and the CIA or NASA or anybody else that would give him information? And I said, if not, the last time that a president didn't receive good information, I said, hell, they shot and killed him on Elm Street in Dallas. So I'm just sitting there going, good God, I do not want to relive all this crap again. But at the same time, we have some major, major things going on in America, and trying to get the resource and information on the media and the social media and everything else, you get all different types of stories. So I would ask people just keep an open mind on all of this, because we have to, and if we don't, I'm not sure where we're headed. So anyway, I want to throw those things back to you guys. Yeah, go ahead, Larry.
The one thing that I'm concerned about relevant to our topic is there, you know, one of the reasons they hold back the JFK records is because there may be some sources or family members of sources that they don't want to expose to harm, right? And we're a little concerned that given what's gone on in Afghanistan, that line of thinking, they may decide to start using that on the records that are being postponed. They say, oh, well, you know, we can't really release these records because that would put some people that worked for us who are now their family members are still in Cuba or something, or, you know, and our response to that's going to be, well, then just black out their names. but still release the records. But just a little concerned that this might bring up another excuse for them not to release the records, because, you know, right now they're trying to get people out of Afghanistan that were translators and otherwise helped us, right? And that could,
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a very good point. And I know we could debate this for hours, but at the same time, I just want to point out that what's going on in the world today, and in the United States being a focal point on a lot of this stuff, is, you know, puts us right in the middle of everything that's going on. And I do remember, being from Kansas City, I do remember the entire city being shut down, not only on November 22nd and that weekend, but also the biggest thing that I saw was when Martin Luther King was assassinated. I mean, they shut the city down at 7 o'clock in the evening, and I was out running track and I was a high school senior, and I was told by my coach, he says, you drove these six people down here. He says, can you get them back before 7 o'clock? And I said, pedal to the metal. I said, I'll try to drive safely as much as I possibly can. But we got into a main artery and just outside of downtown Kansas City, and we had our track uniforms on. God forbid, our school colors were blue and white, and most of the white that we had on, we had white hoods. And I'm sitting here going, take the hoods off, okay, guys? And but we ended up getting pulled over by the Shawnee Mission Police Department, and there were eight police cars, but there was nobody on the road. And it was a scary situation. It was a beautiful day out, but they pulled us over, shotguns, and I do remember a big shot putter who was in the front seat with us. He says, I can handle these guys. And I told him to flip around and shut up. And I said, I'll handle it, okay? So I said, just get out of the car, put your hands, and assume the position. And most of you guys know what I'm talking about. Not from experience, but I'm just saying you, most of you probably know. Maybe Larry does, I don't know.
And let's point out that those were sweatshirt hoods that you guys
had. That's true, yes. We had no markings on them or anything like that. But anyway, we got out and we had our hands up, and the police lieutenant who came over, he looks at me and he goes, Quinlan. And everybody there turns around, looks at me, and I said, Officer Brady. And he says, do you want to tell me what in God's name is going on here? I said, we just got back from a track meet, and I'm trying to get these guys back to their house before we get stopped by the police, but obviously that didn't happen. And he says, are you going to vouch for everybody? I said, I'll vouch for everybody except for that big guy over there. And the scout-putter turned around, and he looked at me, and I said, yeah, I'll vouch for him. Just keep his mouth shut. And he says, well, then get these people out of here. You know you're supposed to be on a curfew at 7 o'clock. So he let us go. But I swear to God, you know, just some of the mentality of people, and it hasn't changed. It hasn't changed that much. I mean, we got people that want to get out of cars and just beat the ever-loving crap out of people for turning right, turning left, or not using their blinkers. And you guys know where I'm coming from on that. But just keep an open mind as much as you possibly can, and just understand that, you know, instead of going through a second assassination-type situation where we're covering up documents, and we will, and this will be probably later on for somebody else to look at, because I'm certainly not going to look at it, but I certainly understand what's going on. So, again, guys, thank you for getting in the meeting, and thank you very much for all the work that you guys do, and thanks for coming on our program.
Well, I think that ends the Project JFK CSI Dallas book club section of our show now. But especially, I like the fact that Casey, you know, is letting us know what he's reading, because he, of course, informs me, and then now then I have to get books, which I always look at the bookcase going, where the hell did I put another book at? Well, I find the spot, and I think we all should, especially with.
Neurotic is Casey when it comes to the tax.
I'm sorry, did you say neurotic or erotic? What was that, Larry?
Neurotic. The word erotic and Casey doesn't come to in my mind together. you might have to delete this part of the recording.
Well, you know, Larry, at least they're not picture books, okay?
Hey, Casey?
Yeah.
Hey, Casey, if that kook outside the...
Uh-oh. We just lost your audio, Brooks.
Oh, really?
Oh, there you are. There you are.
Oh, okay. I was saying if that kook outside the Library of Congress did have a bomb the other day, we'd be all right because Casey's got hard copy backup of everything.
Yeah, you know that. You know that for sure. So
he has the hard copies. I have the digital. So, yeah.
There you go. There you go.
Well, I know that definitely, you know, I speaking of, you know, not only JFK, and I don't want to get off topic, but there's just a lot of shit going on these days. That's the only word I can use for it. And I think that word covers it for what's going on that we read about daily, or we watch the news and see what's going on, like what you just mentioned, Brooks, and the whole thing with Afghanistan now. So it's one of those things where every time, well, not say every time, but you know, we like what Larry talked about a while ago, we want to, you know, get the information out there on the release of the files, and there's always going to be something on the front burner, and we always seem to get our what we want to have happen get pushed to the back burner, but we've got to you know, simmer there for a little while, and then we can bring it back to a full boil.
Well we do have the September 26th date, regardless of whether it's, you know, legitimately established, and that is the hook to get people to focus on, you know, what's the archive is going to do, what's the president going to do. So, and that's why I suggest after 9/11, which is the 20th anniversary, understandably is going to be a lot of media attention. Right after then, there'll be that 2-week window where we could try to get maximum exposure, you know, to our issue before they start going back to the budget issues.
Yeah, and I think another thing, especially this year, with Oliver Stone's new documentary coming out, you know, I would hope that it gets put on either a stream platform, released on DVD, something. I don't see that it will probably be making its way to, you know, movie houses. And then again, it may. It depends on COVID, you know, takes and shuts things down again, that extreme.
The last I heard, that he has been unable to get U.S. distribution so far.
Well, there's always – now, I'll throw this shout-out to Mr. Stone. There's always the route that Project JFK, CSI Dallas would love to carry, you know, that. And we can – hey, hell, we'll sell tickets, and people pay to view it, and then he gets his cut. I'd be more than willing to do that. I think that the new documentary is going to be something that everybody needs to see.
De Eugenio and see if he can get back to Stone, because, you know, it's showing in Europe, but no one's picked it up here in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we would be more than happy to do a screening. I know sometimes when we did conferences down in Dallas, we would, you know, highlight different films that, you know, that were usually some that some people had seen and some that, you know, people hadn't seen. And speaking of which, I'm going to throw a shout out to my guys over that made Coup and Camelot documentary. And again, if anybody hasn't already ordered a copy or seen that, they can go to our website and look in the affiliated links tab to order their own copy of A Coup and Camelot. It's a very great poor English. It's a very good documentary that I think everybody should see and own a copy of. They have it on DVD and Blu-ray both. Speaking of, you know, sending out some shameless plugs, I want to also send out one to Craig Ciccone. He's the gentleman that created the maps, the schematic blueprints of 10th and Patton, and also Dealey Plaza, along with his book that explains all the eyewitnesses. And we've had him on the show a couple months back. So if anybody that, you know, has not already ordered their copy of that, I know I have them on my wall. Here at my house, and you know, good research material, and that's another reason why I like to say thanks again to Casey for giving us the research material, the books that he's reading. And if anybody else comes across a book that we have not talked about, or something you're reading right now that's pertinent to sharing with the class, so to speak, speak up and you know, let us know what you are reading or what you're finding that's out there that maybe we need to share with everybody else in the group. I do want to send out a quick thanks to Russ Baker for joining us in our meetings, and of course his website at Who, What, Why. I believe that's the – Russ, give me your website real quick. I don't have it here.
Yeah, you got it, whowhatwhy.org.
That's right. That's right. Well, definitely want to thank you for, partaking in sharing in our meetings. And you've always got great information. And we're going to have to talk offline and see about giving you a speaking spot at our conference. See if we can get that planned out. With that, I think I've pretty well spoken enough. Would anybody, Joe, are you in the room with us? Joe Backus? Well, I can see you're up there. I can't hear anything. Joe, are you having microphone issues? I see that you're unmuted. We can't hear you, but if you'd like to maybe restart your computer and come back in, if you'd like, or if you want to, I know you asked who was speaking today. If you're something you want to share with us, we'd love to hear from you.
He did just type hello in the chat.
Yeah, I see that in the chat here. I see his microphone's unmuted, but I just can't hear him or see him. Sometimes that happens if. Oh, he's got mic issues. I got it. Well, if you can fix your mic issues, Joe, we'd love to hear what you've got. Russ, while I've got you up here, tell us what's going on with your website and what are you working on these days?
Well, I'm trying to run a nonprofit news organization and cover all the craziness in the world with very limited resources. So we work long hours trying to do what we can. We're growing, it's a difficult environment. There's a lot of noise out there, but we've got a great group of people, and it's an interesting model because we have just enough budget to pay a kind of a skeleton crew, and then we build all the rest of the organization out with pro bono. So we've got tons of people, lawyers and accountants and this and that, who just came on to help, and we built a whole organization on that basis. I also am working on a Kennedy book I've been doing for about 12 years now. I'm hoping I'm down to the last 2 or 3 years. I've got a group of volunteers, 6 people who meet with me every Saturday, and we work on things. And right now we're working on the Tippett, the wallet controversy, and we've spent weeks on this, drilling down. And we're still finding witnesses and sources and things. And so if anybody has any expertise in really anything on Kennedy and they have nothing better to do with their time and they want to pitch in on something, I'm always glad to hear from them. We need a lot of help. We need operations managers who can get us better organized because we got, hundreds of books and tens of thousands of documents and more stuff we're discovering by the minute. But trying to keep a handle on it is a real challenge.
Absolutely, Russ. And help anybody that can help your group out. Get a hold of Russ and volunteer to do whatever you can. And I know here at Project JFK, anything that we can do, just let us know. Keep us in the loop on that.
And just a shout out to some of the people I see on this list. I don't know him personally. I don't think William Law, but, I've been reading your stuff, which is fabulous, the book depository and so on. And so we build on what other people have done, and then we try to add to it. But definitely a collaborative effort, formal or informal.
Yeah, I want to say that, Russ's group, Russ's tentacles extend all over the world. We were trying to get hold of Dr. Porto, who was one of the only doctors at Parkland that had not been on the record. And, he allegedly had said that he had told one of the other doctors that he thought he had seen a entry wound in the president's temple. And we couldn't find him forever, and Russ found him. Unfortunately, he's at the point in his life where his memory isn't too good. But big shout out to Russ for running him down. And then we're still trying to get our buddy in Texas, the last guy to touch the rifle. He has not been too open to speaking, but I know Russ is using all his journalistic skills. And that's another important thing is Russ has the skill set to some of these witnesses have been mistreated in the past. Russ oftentimes is the one that could actually, you know, professionally approach them and get them to speak when they wouldn't speak to a researcher who's, you know, doesn't have the skill set that experienced reporters do. So I just want to give a shout out to Russ for his work.
Well, it's all about supporting each other. And, you know, that's one thing that I know that me and Casey and Brian talked about. We reach across the lines to speak with everybody that, you know, maybe in the past there was animosity or whatever between certain groups or individuals. We like to keep open lines of communication because you just never know what you're cutting out if you don't, you know, if you don't reach out and talk to everybody. So yeah, definitely whowhatwhy.org. And if I don't have a link on our website, there will be one soon that you can go to from our site to Russ's site, because he does great work over there. And I've been on his site several times gathering information and reading articles that he puts on there. I see Brooks is sitting there. It looks like he has something to say. Brooks, I'm going to call on you and put you on the spot for a second. What are you working on right now?
Well, I'm working on three different things, and I'm trying to flip a coin between the three to figure out exactly what I want to talk about as far as November goes. I'm doubling back, following up on my presentation that I did in May, taking a closer look at the bus taxi scenario versus Roger Craig's story that Oswald left by the Rambler. I think that dovetails into the work I'm doing on 605 Elsbeth. And I'm also working on, I'm working on Jack Doherty as well.
So
those are my three topic areas. And I've done a deep dig and I just got to get it all organized and figure out which presentation comes next. So.
Anything new about that you found about what Doherty saw or did not see when Oswald walked into the building?
Well, I don't want to get the cat out of the bag because I'm not sure I'm going to do Doherty in November, but he lied profusely during his testimony when he was deposed in Dallas. Lie after lie after lie. And I found that very... Well, it's beyond suspicious that it's, and granted, I think at the two times that he was interviewed by the FBI, his dad actually showed up and said, you know, my son is disturbed. He's got mental issues. And I think they conveniently provided a cover for Doherty, but if there's a linchpin as far as the school book depository goes and the whole story, where was Oswald and what happened inside the building, Doherty's it. And, but there, I've done the deep dig on the family. It's led me to, I'll give you a little sneak preview. He had an older brother and his older brother went to Sunset High School. In fact, Jack went to Sunset, but he didn't graduate, but his older brother Redfern did. And he went to school with two other Dohertys. A Temple Jackson Doherty and another guy by the name of William Doherty. Both of those guys went into the military. All three end up, two of the three went to A&M. Temple Jackson Doherty started out at UT Austin, but apparently has an honorary degree from A&M. But when you do the deep dig on all these guys, they were in the same class together. They were classmates. They're from Oak Cliff. They all knew each other. It's a very interesting story. So that's part of the Jack Doherty picture.
When you look at when you're looking at his testimony, it's important to remember that first the Warren Commission, Earl Warren actually authorized the lawyers to do unrecorded pre-interviews with the witnesses to kind of see what their story is before they actually formally go on the record.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is to when they go off, if you ever see them go off the record in the deposition. You want to see what the topic was and then what happens afterwards when they go back on the record, because there's Spencer, Spector and these guys were really good lawyers and they knew how to get witnesses back on the on track or get them to, you know, I know like Dr. Curtis had said, you know, that they really beat him up off the record to try to convince him that what he saw was wrong. So it's just for research is when if you see someone going off the record, you should see, you know, what was the line of questioning and then look at the line of questioning afterwards and see, you know, did it go in a different direction? Because that would suggest that.
Oh, absolutely. You see that all the time. And it happens
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
It's like we don't like where this is going. Time out, you know. And
Right.
But it's when you read his testimony and you do the deep dig on Doherty. For example, one of the things he says in his deposition when he would, cause he didn't go to Washington. He,
right.
I think it was sometime in early April.
They interviewed him in Dallas, right?
Yeah. They did it in Dallas. They asked him what he did when he got out of the service and he said, I didn't do anything. And basically he lived with his parents, stayed home for 7 years. Well, heck, you go to this Dallas City Directory. He worked 3 years as a cargo handler at the airport, and then he worked 3 years, I think, for Goodwill Industries as repairing furniture or something like that in Oak Cliff. So those aren't jobs to be embarrassed about. So why would you, with a very simple work history like that, why would you stand there and lie to say, I didn't do anything for 7 years? But that's just one example. It's just lie after lie after lie, which I find very perplexing. And I even said to Bill Simpich one day, I don't even know if the right Jack Doherty is the guy that showed up, because if he's mentally impaired or he might under duress during testimony say something he shouldn't or get his facts screwed up, do they want to take the risk of him being there? And so I don't know who the gatekeepers were when these people came to the federal building and showed up and say, hey, I'm Jack Doherty. I'm here to give my testimony. And he's in a room with one attorney and a stenographer, and that's it. How do you even know you got the right guy? So I just pose that question because if you don't want to get in, and because when you read some of these depositions and testimonies, they get into details. They ask you questions about your employer. What did you do? What happened next? He doesn't cover any of that because he basically says, I didn't do anything for 7 years. Well, if you're sending somebody in there who's not the real Jack Doherty, that would be a convenient thing to do. Just say, I'm not going to talk about it because I didn't do anything for 6 or 7 years. You know, I just stayed home. I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm just that when I went through it and I started looking at his personal history, that's where I zeroed in, and it led me to really start digging into family history. So anyway, I've got a lot of interesting files and I might cover it in November. If not, maybe it'll wait till next spring, or maybe I'll do it in a special breakout, but there's a lot to be revealed and talk about when it comes to Jack Doherty.
Well, great stuff, Brooks. I'm excited to hear what your take is on that. And also, Brooks is going to be one of our speakers at the November conference happening in just a couple months.
Hey, I want to say one thing. I want to say one thing real quick, David. There's been a lot of, there's a lot of great work. And I think Russ Baker made his comment a few minutes ago. There's so many of us that are just churning through this stuff and working on our own little niches and areas. And I've decided to zero in on a handful of things. And, you know, I'm trying to go a mile deep and an inch wide, because otherwise you don't do anything justice. But Greg Parker and the Aussie group has done some phenomenal work over the years as it relates to, I think they've got a thing on the Beckley Bunch. They've done quite a bit of work on Doherty. Those of us in the research community that are into this, we've all got to thank one another because I use those resources often to fill in the blanks or try to go to get a better explanation of what may have happened or, you know, who was doing what, when, and where type of a thing. But without it, it'd be a real hard task. It'd be a hard task.
Well, great, great information there, Brooks. And yeah, like I say, we've got to, what you just said, thanking each other. It's not just a, you know, one person's doing everything and they're going to have all the answers. It's a team effort. It's a group effort. And, you know, Larry takes care of our legal stuff of, you know, handling, sending information to the government because that's his forte. And Russ, you know, as a journalist, you know, that's his forte. And some of us, you know, as teachers and researchers, we all have our certain niches for sure. So, yeah, great information there. Let me look here at, let's see.
Let me get something on here, David, real quick.
Go ahead.
You know, Brooks kind of reminded me of a class that I was teaching. And a lot of my students were sitting there going, well, you know, this is too meticulous. And I said, good God. I said, where'd you get the word meticulous? Well, I said, I'm all about definitions. I said, where did you get that? Well, I read it in the book that you assigned us. I said, oh, my God, you read something? So anyway, but the point was is that one of the girls in the back of the room said, you just covered 700 years of history in probably about 15 minutes. And I said, well, I'm trying to catch up where the curriculum wants me to catch up. And she says, it's interesting in reading history. She goes, nobody ever talks about going to the restroom. And I started laughing. Everybody turned around and looked at her. And I said, well, you know, you're right. I said, for 700 years, they held it. And, of course, everybody was laughing and stuff. And so basically, we went off track to try to figure out exactly where everybody went. I said, you know what a chambermaid is? So we started going off into European history and stuff like that. So, I mean, there's as meticulous as you want to get, and a lot of you are very meticulous in this, it is very, very vital and important. And even if you go down the wrong avenue or wrong road, eventually, you know, you're going to sit back and say, well, I found something out that I didn't know. But what I'm finding out is I'm tying stuff in to and I'm going to have to go back and read Russ Baker's book primarily because a lot of the stuff that he was saying about the Bush family is coming 360 degrees around full circle. And I'm going, I got to go back and reread that book. So, I mean, I'm going to add that to the other books that I'm reading right now. But it's interesting about how deep you want to get, even in a classroom situation. And a lot of the stuff in a classroom, high school classroom situation is surface. You hit it and miss it, hit it and miss it. What happened in 1787? But at the same time, you always get a couple people to sit back and say, hey, what about this? And then when somebody yells out meticulous, I'm going, I want to talk to that kid. So interesting stuff, and keep going what you're doing.
All right, thanks, Casey. Well, I'm going to open up the floor here. I don't know. Hold on. Got Joe coming back in. Let's see if Joe's got his microphone and video fixed. And if he does, we'll turn the floor over to him. Hold on just a second. Hey, Joe, you back with us? Joe, can you hear us?
Hello?
Hey, there you are.
Okay, good.
All right, back at the lounge, I see.
Yes.
Well, yeah, you were talking to me earlier. We're kind of just doing a show and tell or a share and tell. What are you working on, Joe? What's going on in your world these days?
I'm still working on a list of all known riff numbers. I made a list available to Leno Sanek on his Black Op Radio show on show 1040. You can look that up and download it there. Since then, I found some more numbers, and I'm working on it, updating that. As I've been updating that, NARA came out May 17th with about six Excel databases that break up the total number. I have about 333,000 plus, and that's about what I think the six Excel databases break it down to, like 50,000 chunks or so. So it's about, I'm finding a little more. I've gone through the CIA. There's a lot here and there that are missing that I found. I'm going through the FBI now. The FBI is the bulk of the collection. So out of like the 330,000, I'm about closing in on 200,000. I'm at 170,000 plus. So I hope to finish this before November, or is it October 26th that they're planning to do a release?
It's the release is supposed to happen October 26th. The archivist is supposed to notify the president on September 26th of his recognition.
So the notification on the 26th of September is what they plan to release?
Yeah.
As of now?
That's the recommendation. That would be the recommendation to the president about what should be released.
How are they planning to release things? Do you know? Are they doing it with a scanned PDF, or are they doing it in hard copy? If under normal circumstances, we didn't have to deal with COVID and Archives 2 was open.
I don't know for sure. I assume that they're going to post it on the website. Like they, you know, I don't know, because that's an interesting question. You know, how are they going to, you know what, we'll ask that question. We'll ask that question when we give a priority list.
Okay, well, coming up with a priority list is also going to be a problem, because if you looked at what was released in the 2017 and 2018 releases, if you just compare the same riff number between those various releases, you'll see documents released differently.
Huh.
So the same person doing the redaction and lifting off the redactions is not the same person doing the same job. Like in one document, you know, the name John Smith will be open and you can read, and then the same release in April, it'll be redacted. Now you go back and forth on some things, but if you compare them, you know, put them side by side, sometimes you can see everything that they're trying to hide. So, and also there's a great many more agencies than the HSCA, the FBI, and the CIA, although those are the bulk of them. There are dozens and dozens of agencies people don't even think of and never even heard of before. So,
and then there's the JFK Library that has kept the Bobby Kennedy records under wraps.
A lot of the Bobby Kennedy records were released, actually.
Yeah, but there's still, there are no tapes about Cuba from 1963 from any of the meetings. And this, when NARA shut down, they were working with the Bobby Kennedy estate to release more stuff, but they still hold some stuff back, apparently.
Well, this is kind of separate from JFK records releases, I understand it, some of the Bobby Kennedy material. There is a rift, no pun intended, between the Kennedy family and the Kennedy, JFK and RFK and Teddy. Because yes. JFK got a library, Teddy now has a building, and Bobby has nothing.
Right.
And if it wasn't for Bobby, there wouldn't have been a Senator John Kennedy.
Right.
So the family was a little ticked off, but I think Ethel and or the sons or whoever is in charge of Bobby's records were holding stuff back. But now I haven't looked at Bobby Kennedy material specifically, but there was a release of some stuff in the 90s and the 2000s. And what was released, I think, is either available, was on a CD-ROM or something, or some stuff was on the JFK website. I mean, there were a lot of stuff.
There are still, still records when he was Attorney General dealing
with... I'm sure there's still stuff to tell, yeah.
Yeah, right. And Narra was trying to get them released. Narra went out of business, and, you know, they're still being held back. And they're relevant to what happened with Cuba, you know, and with the Cuba involved.
And other stuff, yeah.
Judge, did you say that when you last spoke, the database that Narra had up, you said was only like 52% of the total database? The spreadsheet they had was only like 52% of the whole database? Is that been updated? Did you say that that's been updated now or not?
Well, what was on the JFK database that they had online, I would say, was less than half of the material that the entire JFK record collection consists of. That online database was always way, way behind, even when the review board was around, as to what they were releasing and declassifying, and that you could just get if you were in person at NARA.
Okay.
So they were always behind. And even that got taken down. That was taken down in September.
Right.
Of this year.
Right.
And last year, 2020, it was taken down. And since then, just in May of this year, they put out these six Excel databases on their website, which they are saying is, you know, as good as what they had online, or maybe even more up to date. Yes, okay. No. It's more than I think the JFK online database was when it was online. It is not everything. Okay. I was looking at just some recently FBI records. 124-10203 and 204 are not even there. And there's 500 documents each for those two serials. So I'm slowly going through this. I mean, I'm getting frustrated and bored with myself, even as motivated as I am with JFK material. I keep looking through all these Blum and Riff numbers twice. But I am finding some more things that they've skipped. I hope to have that finished soon. Sorry?
Are you saying that these are records that have been released but are not available online?
No, I'm not. I don't know the release status. Okay. I'm just trying to come up with a total number of the known riffs. And we can go from there as to what was released and what was not released. By the color of the font that I'm using, I know whether they were previously even mentioned before. So if I have them in black, I know they exist. If I have them green, I know they were released. If I have them in red, no one's ever used these riff numbers or published them before. But sometimes when you go through things, NARA's RIF Excel database would let you believe that there's only 60 documents in a record series. And here's the key thing. When the review board went out of business, what the review board was doing as they were releasing things document by document, they would publish that document by document listing in the Federal Reserve. As you got closer to when they were closing down in 1998, they were releasing stuff literally by the truckloads, and I mean like big trucks. And they could not afford to publish them, because to publish them list by list in the Federal Reserve was coming out of the review board's budget to do stuff. The Federal Register was not doing this service for them for free. The review board had to pay the Federal Register for these lists to be published in the Federal Register. So as you got towards April 8th, they were allowed to do a summary. So they would only say, like, we're releasing 8,000 CIA documents, and they wouldn't list the 8,000. But if you went into the review board's files at NARA, you could get that list, because they did create it. They did create a list. So I got all of those. So I got those, and I went through everything. So, like, previously, they'll say, take, for example, I'm just creating something fictionally out of my head, an FBI document. And the first three letters are the FBI. The middle five numbers are for a subject, and the next five numbers are how many specific documents they have on that subject matter. For example, they want you to believe there's only 50 or 60 documents for that. But if you went through the unpublished listing that the review board made, all of a sudden you'll see a RIF number for that agency, for that subject, and there's 408.
Wow.
Because you'll see it isolated in amongst other things. So you have to really be anal and go through this with a microscope to see that, and then put that in, and you go to your Excel database, okay, and now I have to put in 60 to 408. So these RIF numbers I would put in red because they're not listed anywhere else, but you know they have to exist if they got to 408, whereas previously there was only 60. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So going through that takes a lot of time. So that's what I'm doing. And I've already done that once. Now with the NARA coming out with this new Excel database, these six Excel databases that they released, I'm going through my list again, and I'm finding some more numbers. But I'm up to FBI documents right now. After FBI, the next big bunch is the HSCA, but there's a lot of other material in there. One agency nobody is talking about are Army stuff. And Army stuff is in the 190s, is the RIF number, 195, 198 or so. There's as much Army stuff as there is HSCA stuff.
Really?
And nobody, I think Malcolm Blunt, John Newman, and I are probably the only ones who know this. Because I went down to Washington sometimes, and Malcolm, under the guise of being an international student at a university in Maryland, which was at one time where John Newman taught, was taking classes. But I think he was really there to have an apartment and to go into archives every day. And so once I stayed down there with them, and when we were there, they had just released a huge bulk of Army stuff. And John just happened to come in that day. We had not prearranged to meet. And was like, oh, hi, John, come on over here. And he comes in, and he had learned that some Army documents were released, and he had just requested them. And Malcolm goes, oh, right here. And Malcolm already had a cartload of stuff. There are a lot of Army stuff. Army intelligence is all over this case. And nobody has even looked at them recently.
But those have been released. In other words, if we're looking
at I think they've been released since the 90s.
Okay.
But nobody's been doing anything with them.
Okay. Well, can you work with Rex?
Sent Rex a copy of the first Excel database that I released and gave to Lenos Hannett. So he's got those numbers, but I'm updating it with stuff by going through what NARA released on May 17th. So when I'm done with that, that'll be the most up-to-date information I have as to what the entirety of the JFK Registry's collection should be, of what all the RIF numbers that I know of. So there should be at least this many RIF documents. And everything in red, and I don't know if that's been released yet or not. I can't believe that it has, because they're not appearing in any review board list that they published or in the unpublished list that they made. From April 8th, 1998 till October, there's about 20 lists, and nobody's gone through them except me, as far as I know. And I don't even think anybody knows they exist except for me.
So if you can, we're going to work from now to Labor Day on coming up with our list. If you could either reach out to me or reach out to Rex with any doc, did you want to add?
If you're having Zoom meetings, say with you and Rex and Mark Dade and whoever else, plug me in. I'll be there for you.
Okay, cool.
And I'd love to, I'll share my Excel database, this is like version 2, with you guys. And I'd love to meet whoever this new liaison person is. And I hope, what I fear is happening is the CIA is taking the lead point in offering up objections for all the other agencies, not just the CIA, which they may be doing, hey boys, follow our lead on objecting stuff, or there may be CIA equities, the issue
right.
of third party equities. And so there's CIA information. In a Secret Service record, or from the Department of Justice, or from some agency nobody's heard of, I'm fear that might be going on.
And that might be also because I remember when we spoke to the archivist at the end of May. So April 26th was the date for the agencies to notify the archive they were going to have any postponements. And they were getting narrow with getting requests for extensions of that deadline, again, because of COVID. So I would suspect that in that breach, in that gap, that I could see CIA asserting equities, or at least providing, you know, cover them. But we don't have the details right now. But anyway, we don't, we're having back channels to the guy that is the point person in the White House. He's not actually participating, you know, on our calls.
Right.
So there'll be no one from the government on our calls. It's just, you know, some people, like, you know some people, and then they communicate that way.
Okay. Yeah, but I'd love to meet whoever is with the White House, or with this new kid you talked about. Is that the one at the White House or not?
Yeah, there's an attorney. If you look at my cover letter, there's Dana Remus is the White House counsel, but the next person is the person at the NSC, and that's going to be the point person within the White House. Cedar Baum or something like that. And then we have NARA, and then the PIDB. So, but that second name is the person that's at the NSC, and he's brand new. So, you know, he doesn't know anything about the JFK Records Act.
Well, hopefully that's good.
Yeah. Well,
hopefully you never know when they're brand new and they don't know, because.
Yeah. Well, that's why we sent him a memo. So, you know, we're trying to educate him before he gets educated.
Right. Yeah. Anyone else have a question for me or anything?
Well, Joe, I want to just throw in a comment. The work that you're doing is outstanding. And, you know, I couldn't think of a nicer guy to be slaving away and getting the information that you're working on. So wanted to tell you, keep up with that. And, you know, keep sharing with us, too, about what you're finding. I did not know that about the Army Intel. I didn't know there was that many documents that were out there. So that's great information.
Yeah, those RIF numbers are in the first. If you go to Linux Enix site, look at for Black Op Radio episode 1040, and just scroll down and you'll see that Excel RIF database that I have there. So that's the first one. I've since found some other things, especially in the CIA, but I'm going through it again. So I'll have an updated version of that available soon.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Joe.
Is that a real background you have there, Joe? Or is that, are you in a bar?
Oh, no, it's just a goofy, it's the Guinness Bar in Dublin.
Ah, okay. I thought you were like,
No.
You're in Albany, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't look like Albany in the background. So I was wondering.
No. Zade's old stomping ground. Zade went to Albany Law School.
Yeah. He's been fabulous. I know people had some doubts about him, but he has been just a really good resource for us. You know, I mean, obviously there would be at a point where if we went into litigation that he couldn't help us, but he's been just an enormous resource to our group.
Hey, Joe, this is Casey. I just wanted to ask you a question about either a timing or a ceiling on the release of the military documents. When I got in some of those sites, I was told that they were under lock and key for a number of years. And then I asked John Newman, and he said some of them are locked away and you can't see these things for 30 years, and that's why I think congressional record basically states that you can't see some of these documents for X amount of years, or whenever the military wants to release them. Do you know anything about that, or am I close on that?
That may be in regards to military records that were not acquired by the review board or NARA. If you read John Newman's book, JFK in Vietnam, he goes to a lot of military archives like Carlisle Barracks and some military archives here and there. So he might be dealing with those directly. I have not looked through all of these military records for the Army, but I know they exist. I know the RIF numbers for them, and I have the RIF numbers for them. So all I have is the RIF numbers for them. And that they were, that a lot of Army stuff were released by the review board, and they're listed in the Federal Register and in the unpublished Federal Register listing they made. There's a lot of military, and these are like Joe Califano stuff. That's where we got Operation Northwoods and some other stuff. So Joe Califano helped us get a lot of stuff. But, you know, if you were to break down the entire collection, you know, FBI is the bulk of it, CIA and HSEA, and then I would say the next largest group of stuff is military.
And then Department of State, they were supposed to work with Russia, Cuba, and Mexico City to get records, and I don't think they really ever did or didn't do a lot. Have you seen anything?
They had some trouble with the Department of State, with the review board. There are Department of State records. Some FBI or some stuff on Cuba and Vietnam, where a lot of stuff released. Doug Horn worked in that area a lot. But
yeah.
The country they had the biggest problem with was Belarus, really.
Yeah.
So.
It's interesting. Apparently the FBI is the one that fought the ARB the most. And there's actually at the Clinton Library, there's copies of some of the pleadings or the papers that were filed to try to overrule decision by the ARB to declassify. And they were the ones that were trying to use the informant or the criminal investigation exception.
Yeah.
And when
they first got going, the review board decided to test the FBI and the CIA to see how much they would comply with the law.
Yeah.
And they released documents that the CIA and FBI had already released themselves before the JFK Act came along. The CIA didn't fall for it. The FBI did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was like from day one. So the FBI was always a pain in the butt about informants and whatnot. But, you know, even the review board kind of made fun of that. I mean, if you have a stripper working for Jack Ruby, who was an informant in 63, it's now 1990s. She's still getting employed as a stripper? Probably not. I don't think we need to keep protecting her. You know, I don't think it's where we're, you know, her stripper career or the chorus gal career.
Yeah.
So
they actually had to, they actually amended FOIA in 1974 in response to the original FBI objections to make it harder for them to assert that exception. And they still, you know, dragged. I mean, imagine they're the only ones that filed formal appeals with the president.
Yeah. That's, you know, the amount of material is from the FBI. It's huge. It's probably half the collection is FBI.
Wow.
If not 50%, it's like 46-47%. And they had informants everywhere. When they were first releasing stuff, in Michael Beschloss's book, there's a case about an FBI, a civil rights murder. And there's four guys talking in a car somewhere. Three of the four were FBI informants who didn't know the others were FBI informants. But even it's stuff going, I mean, some of the stuff you saw about some of the names of like the Baptist Street church bombing where the four girls were blown up and what the suspects were. And the FBI knew those names, had audio tapes of those guys for years, never told anybody. And some of those names you see in some of the early JFK releases. You know, you see a lot of stuff about. Casey's trying to say something, but.
Casey, your microphone's on mute, buddy.
You're talking about Birmingham, Alabama?
Yeah.
I believe that's what, okay. Gotcha.
I mean, there's a lot of well-known civil rights things that we now have information about because of the JFK Act. I mean, it expanded. There's a lot of material in there and a lot of crimes and a lot of smoking guns about a lot of other murders and illegal going-ons and things, you know, in the JFK Act. And when the way the law was written, if something was still classified and you wanted to keep control of it, you had to, like, make some arrangements. Excuse me, man. That's why the LBJ Library suddenly came forward with all the presidential recordings that Lyndon made, and Bezos' book came out. If they didn't release that stuff, they were going to lose control of it to the National Archives.
Oh.
And LBJ recorded everything. I mean, everything. Everywhere. They would test people out on how loyal they were to him and loyal on policies. And then he would play that against them to get them to vote for them. Because I got you on, you know, tape saying this, so you know, I need you to do this and that. And that's how we got, who was it, Senator Cooper? He's talking about how he got...
Sherman.
Huh?
Oh, I got you talking about.
He's talking to a senator, and he's bragging about how he got Earl Warren to take the job to be the chairman of the commission to look into the assassination. And he says, by the way, you're going to be on the committee too.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's great stuff.
Well, thank you, Joe. I want to step in here and talk about a couple of things real quick. Let me put the link here in the chat log. This kind of talks about stuff that me and Brian's been conversing back and forth with J. Gary Shaw about. Let me do a screen share here real quick. All right. Over at YouTube, this video, it's been appearing online for, you know, a few years now, but every so often it's one of those videos that if you don't catch it, you go back to it, it may not be there. This is called JFK, the West Texas Connection. This was in 1992 about the Ricky Roscoe whitetail. I'm going to put a link up on our website, so if you don't get a chance to view it today, you can always go to the chat log, highlight that link, and it'll take you to the site, providing the fact that the video's there. But this was filmed in 1992 down in Texas. I think it's Big 2 News is who brought it out. It's about an hour and 47 minutes long. And it goes into great detail about Ricky and Roscoe White. I think Gary's in the audience. Gary, are you with us? Well, anyway, I guess maybe Gary's not with us at the moment. But anyway, if you have not had an opportunity to view this video, and you're interested in Roscoe White and also Ricky as well, give it a look and find out what you think about it. It's had basically, well, this is one of those ones that Vince Palomara reposted February 14th of this year. It's had, I think, 2,640 views, it looks like. It's been viewed several times, but it's like it's one of those videos that, you know, gets put up and taken down. I don't know if it's because of copyright issues with Channel 2 or not.
David?
Yeah, go ahead.
How are you?
I was bringing this up because I know that, like I said, I'm going to put a link on our website for people to go and view it. But you want to give me a little bit of you want to tell the audience here a little bit of a background about this film, because you know it really well.
Well, it was one of the earliest really well-done summary of the Roscoe White, Ricky White story. She does better than anybody I know. So if you want to know a few of the facts, a few of the findings and so forth about that incident, this is a good place to go. And I'm glad you're posting it. I think more people need to see it.
Well, that's the point of shining the spotlight on videos that's on here, because I think you're definitely right. I've watched it several times, and I'm not going to tell anybody how to do it, but you can download videos from YouTube and actually save a copy in case it's one of those that, like I say, that disappears quite a bit. You can Google that, and it'll tell you how to do it if you don't already know. But this is one of those ones that, you know, like I say, Gary, Brian told me, he's like, you know, go ahead and make sure that we get it posted. Well, the problem with it is because of copyright issues, you know, I haven't put it on our site, but I am going to put a link there. You'll find that on the Shaw Legacy tab, number 2 on the website, prodigyfk.com, where you'll be able to go directly to this video and watch it in your free time.
David,
definitely.
You might tell them, too, to buy Sarah Peterson and Katana Zachary's book, The Texan Speaks. They have about 2 chapters, and they cover the making of this documentary, you'd call it. And they do a good job, and she got some threats. The young lady who put this on and did such a good job, she got some threats from higher than the sheriff's office in Midland, Odessa.
Yeah, was this Midland or Midlothian? What was it? Was it Midland?
This is Midland, Odessa.
Okay.
Station there, and it was probably over about 4 or 5 nights, I think. You know, about 15 minutes a segment, and it's well worth watching.
Well, absolutely. That's like I said, I wanted to tell everybody about it, and then of course people will be able to go back and watch the replay here later. And speaking of, I'll throw a shameless plug in for us. We've got the YouTube channel Prodigy FK, and there's about 23 videos on here. And of course, our views have definitely gone up since we started doing the journey meetings and the spotlight series. One thing I do want to point out, if some of you guys have not seen a Meeting of the Minds video that I filmed about 2 years ago, actually I guess I posted it 2 years ago, but it was actually filmed in 2017 is when this was filmed. But it's got Dr. David Mantic, William Law, Dr. Michael Chesser, and also Jim Jenkins. And it's one of the I filmed this in my hotel room down at the Adolphus back during a JFK Lancer conference. And it's a real intimate setting where it's just these four guys basically. Jim and Mike and David is sitting there, and William is as well, but they're sharing into the recollections of Jim Jenkins' memory and what he had witnessed in the autopsy room. And unfortunately, if you go to the comment section, I know that it's one of those ones where it says I can't remember what's actually happened. But anyway, there's only been 319 views. It's one of those that's been filmed, and people would state the fact of it needs a lot more views. Well, there's a lot of videos like that on YouTube. But yeah, definitely if you haven't viewed this Meeting of the Minds with those four gentlemen, definitely go on to Project JFK's YouTube channel and check that out, or any of our other videos that that we have on here. And if you want to see what I look like 20 years ago, there's always you know, me with Marina Oswald Porter on Channel 4 News in Kansas City. God, I actually had hair back then.
Anyway, David, good job. Keep up the good work.
Absolutely, Gary. And pretty soon here, hopefully we can get down there and we can get down there and see you here pretty soon here.
Great.
Okay, give me just a second here.
While you're working there, I'm going to throw this out at Joe. You talked about old strippers. I had to throw this out primarily because my wife and I were down in New Orleans, and I wanted to go to the show bar to see what the inside of the bar looked like and, you know, just one of those things and get my picture taken in front of that.
Purely research.
Purely, and mostly undercover research. So, anyway, I got down there. Larry, I thought you'd appreciate that. But it was one of those things. My wife says, who are all these people out in front? I said, those are the barkers. I said, they're saying, hey, come on in here. Come on. You got to check this out. Check it out. And my wife says, what is this? And I said, well, it's what you call an early gentleman's club. It's a strip bar and stuff like that. She goes, and you want to go in there? And I said, well, I want to do some research. But I did it for about 5 minutes and I got out. So, but it reminded me about the old strippers and some of the old strippers that we actually got to interview back in the 1990s were pretty old, and I'm not sure if they're – I know they're not making a living doing that, so just wanted to bring that out.
That's some quick research there, Casey.
you actually end up doing a lot of different things. You sit back and you go, did I actually do that? My God.
And what was your wife's comment after she realized what you were doing?
Well, that was my first wife, Larry. So.
Okay. That seems to be a problem with the JFK research group.
Oh, good Lord, help us all.
You know, my father is in the music business, and so we thought he would know. My brother went in the business. He had his own record label called Bongload Records. And when he told my father said to him, well, what's a bong? And my father had a, you know, he was pretty, I think he was just testing my brother. So my brother starts stuttering. And so I said, well, it's a device that's used to convey gaseous fluids. And my father passed that test.
There you go. Oh, man.
Well, it looks, I guess we've reached that time. Is there anybody else that would like to, you know, comments, questions that you'd like to share with the rest of us here? If so, just unmute your microphone and speak up. I kind of didn't really have a set list of speakers, but I've always got my go-to guys in the group that always have something to share. So.
I got a quick question.
Sure, go ahead, Bruce.
Thank you. Where
good to have you with us.
Huh?
Good to have you with us.
Pleasure, I assure you. What are the top one or two go-to most definitive sources that anyone could think of to confirm or deny or see the latest consensus on whether or not the president and the attorney general were involved with the death of Marilyn Monroe?
Good question. Anybody have an answer for Bruce?
There was a book recently about JFK and Marilyn that just debunks the whole idea that they were ever lovers. It was on Jim Giugino's Kennedys and King website recently. And they had the guy, the author was on Leno Sanek's show. I'd have to research it up. I forget the gentleman's name offhand.
I'll research it. When was he on Len's show?
I couldn't tell you.
Oh, okay. this year, 10 years ago, or 5 years ago?
A year or two or so.
Okay.
Or maybe, you know, earlier this year. Within the last 2 years, I think.
All right. I've read Diogenio's stuff about it. I just want to refresh and
the guy had some issues with the publisher getting the rights back to his book or something. So the book is like impossible to find now. I'm doing this from memory, so I don't recall the specifics.
Yeah, and if someone had asked me the question that I just asked, I would say, oh yeah, look at Diogenio's Kennedys and Kings, because I have looked at it. I just want top of mind and also anything new that I could solicit here.
Let's ask Gary. Gary, do you have any information that would help point Bruce in the right direction?
I'm off.
Oh, there you are. We got you.
You got me?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I noticed that there was a book out that goes into detail, but I forgot what it was, which is my problem nowadays.
Still talking about Marilyn Monroe.
This is Dan Starper. Y'all know Dan.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hey, Dan.
Have you read the, the Chuck and Sam Giancana book, which kind of provides some background about the actual murder of Marilyn, but it doesn't go into the details of, how or if JFK and Bobby Kennedy were sleeping with her. I think, it seems pretty apparent. I may be in the minority, but it seems pretty apparent that they were having an affair. But the issue of her murder or suicide being kind of painted or pointed to the Kennedys in some way to disparage them gets debunked in that book by Sam Giancana's nephew and brother. So I don't love a lot of the books that touch on a lot of the mafia connections, but this one I thought was a particularly good book.
Thank you.
I would not recommend it, but I'm biased. But even still, Have these guys email me, or I'll try to email you through David in a week or so. JFK only met Marilyn like maybe 6 times in their whole lives. And these are well-documented people, public people. We can place them at certain times and events. So we know where they are, JFK mm-hmm. and Marilyn Bobby. And mm-hmm. I think JFK only met her like 6 times. Mm-hmm. And once is when she's singing Happy Birthday, Mr. President.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, there's a meeting at Harry Belafonte's apartment in New York City. And it's the one photograph you'll ever see with JFK, Bobby, and Marilyn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually really, they bring up the contrast a lot because Arthur Schlesinger is there holding a glass of something in his hand, or a cocktail.
Yeah.
And he's closer to the camera.
Yeah.
And in the background, Harry Belafonte, in good quality copies of that photo, you can see Harry Belafonte. But that's used as a proof of like, aha, I've caught them in the act by so many authors. It's just terrible. And Bobby only met her like 4 or 5 times, less than JFK. So I wouldn't put a lot of stock in that they were having an affair. I mean, it's...
David, excuse me.
Hey,
Joe.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. The book is called Bombshell and The Night Bobby Kennedy Killed Marilyn Monroe. It just came out in July of this year. I have not gotten it. I will. It belongs in a collection, I guess. But
came out July the 8th. And so you might want to look at that, you know, to reference.
Who's the author on that, Gary?
The author is Mike Rothmiller, Rothmiller. And he has a co-author, but I don't see that name on there. But the main author is Mike Rothmiller.
I studied the administration and the assassination assiduously for my book that Casey mentioned at the beginning of the thing. And it's recently I was confronted with the accusations that the Kennedys were involved. And I know that my conclusion or consensus is, no, it was that these ideas have been thoroughly debunked. And I pick up my book when I have to remember, like, well, what did I know or what did I, you know, say about it? But I just wanted a fresh, you know.
This is about as fresh as I know of, and I've not looked at it, so I can't really comment on it.
Right, and it's obviously going to try to make the point that Bobby was involved. Like, case closed by the two authors that recounts Peter Lawford's supposed alleged this, that, and the other thing. Just personally, I'm if I had to bet, you know, I'm persuaded that they didn't have a hand in her death. I just wanted the latest and greatest, maybe ammunition to that extent, because I'm a not only a Kennedy defender, but I would, that's putting it mildly. So I just,
here it is.
My question's coming from.
Donald McGovern is the author, and the book is Murder Orthodoxies. And you won't find it. I think he's trying to regain the rights to it and publish it with another publisher.
McGovern, uh-huh.
And McGovern,
Murder.
Kennedy and King, Kim Giugino's website,
yeah.
The Marilyn Monroe Kennedy's Hoax, Part 1.
Okay. Murder Orthodoxies?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
So, Bruce, are you saying that when she sang Happy Birthday, the president had not met her yet? Or not met with her yet?
Say again?
So when she sang Happy Birthday to him, are you saying that's the first time that he actually met her?
No, I think it was one of the last.
Oh, okay. And then I think, Bruce, you said you didn't think that the Kennedys, you know, were involved in the killing. But Bobby, are you convinced that Bobby did go in and take away her diary?
No, I don't have an opinion about that.
Okay.
I'm not convinced that I think it was that case closed book, Murder of Marilyn Monroe, that says he was there. The neighbors saw him in or out maybe twice in her apartment that day. But I hold that whole book with my fingertips, and you know, I rely on what I read that debunked their involvement, and I probably have almost an insurmountable bias that they wouldn't do something like that, but I'm here to learn.
Well, I could see Bobby taking the diary, I mean, as the chief protector of the president, trying to hide that, you know, evidence of an affair at that point in the country's history, what that could have meant to, you know, his election. But, you know, I can't imagine them getting involved in killing somebody. I mean, that's way, I don't think that's in the Kennedys' playbook.
Yeah, if I had a clone or the extra time, I would do a mile deep, inch wide dive like Brooks into this particular subject, relying motivated also by what Chris Fulton wrote in The Inheritance, that maybe, or I'm going to say hopefully, Marilyn was a relationship that the president used some of these women to reach powerful people outside of the surveillance of the CIA or the Pentagon.
That's one thinking about what's the name with Giacconi, right? They were passing messages back and forth to each other.
Yeah.
Thanks, Leo, for putting that in the comment section. Leo has put the show number and also the title there for you, Bruce, if you want to go back on Black Op Radio's episode guide and play that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, well, that's a nice thing. I know today's your first day with us, Bruce, but you know, definitely, you know, this is part of the thing of getting together and sharing information and asking questions, because if somebody doesn't know something, then somebody else will, and we can, you know, converse back and forth. So it definitely definitely a good medium for us to get answers and ask questions.
Another good book. I'm not sure if you can see it, Murder, Inc. by James Johnston.
Hold it up just a little higher.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. So it's about the CIA. He thinks you have to get over the premise, his premise, that Oswald was an agent of Castro. But there's a lot of really interesting stuff in here about the CIA, and he was a counsel to the Church Committee. And there's a lot of great footnotes here in this book. And, you know, he's got other good material about things that happened. You just have to ignore, you know, whenever he gets a chance, and I've spoke, you know, he's helped us a little bit with our project. He, you know, kind of mainlines, so he kind of, where you can go either way on evidence, he always goes towards the Warren Commission. But there's a lot of really good stuff in here about the CIA and the Cuba, you know, operations and stuff. So if, you know, this would be a good addition to The Very Best Men. I read this right after them, in fact, and it was I thought it was a good read. But you just have to get past, you know, his view that Oswald, that Castro basically put things into motion to get Oswald. There's some interesting stuff here also about a radio that supposedly Oswald had that could pick up messages from Cuba or from Russia, and about how the Russians would send signals, coded signals to. But anyway, I'm just raising that as another book.
Well, thanks, Larry.
Hey, Bruce, this is Casey Quinlan. I want to, you stirred something up in me, and it's amazing, you know, how many years you've done research on stuff, and then all of a sudden something pops up. About 30 years ago, a guy that I was doing research with, a guy by the name of Mark Taylor, and some of you might know who Mark is, but Mark, he gives me a call after we do a Kennedy presentation, and he says, and it's on a Sunday, about 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening, and he says, I want to meet up at school, and he says, I have this one guy that wants to meet us, and he's got information to tell us about Marilyn Monroe. And I was questioning Mark. I said, who is the guy? And he goes, he won't give me his name. And I said, so we're going to go up to a public school, and we're going to get inside and talk to this guy. And I said, should I come armed? Because I said, I don't even know who this guy is. But anyway, long story short, we went up there, and we sat down and talked to him. And I kept notes and everything, and I do have his name. But the thing of it is about his name is that I'm not even sure if it's really his name. But this is what he told us. He says, I have the film of JFK and Marilyn Monroe. I'm sitting there going, okay. I said, do you have it with you? He goes, yeah. He says, would you like to see it? I said, hell no. I said, if this thing's real, you know, there's a lot of people, if this whole thing is correct and real, people died over this stuff. I said, who the heck are you? And he goes, I'm the one who shot the film. He says, I work directly for the mafia, but the FBI hired me to get in and film JFK and Marilyn. Now, I'm going to have to agree with Joe on this, is the idea. I don't even think, and maybe you too, Bruce, I don't think JFK had any affair with her. I think if there was any affair at all, it was probably with Bobby, and that I believe that Bobby came in when she was practically dead, or if not dead, and then got the hell out of there after taking care of whatever services he could take care of. And maybe, according to what Larry, I guess, was saying, it got a hold of the date book or her diary. But I thought this guy that we talked to was really a scuzzy, or I don't know who, you know, I don't know how to say it, but I didn't believe anything he said, but I didn't sleep for the next two or three nights because I thought he was tied to the mafia. But again, I'm not really sure. And then he's just completely disappeared off the face of the earth. But he did tell me one thing, which I know David Knight is researching on this. He did say, and David, I haven't even told you this. He says, you know, there's a lot of people in Kansas City that disappear. And I just said, okay, any city that they disappear. And he goes, well, there's a place where they burn bodies. And I kind of looked at him and I said, where's that? And he told me where it was. And I said, yeah, that's a landfill. And so the landfill, he said these people would come down from Chicago, New York, Milwaukee, Philadelphia. They'd drive all the way all night with these dead bodies and then burn them in this landfill out there in Kansas City. And I'm sitting there going, wow. I knew Kansas City was the place for getting booze back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s as they'd come through. But, you know, I never really thought about, well, you know, where do all the bodies disappear? But
it's they have an incinerator. They have an incinerator in the landfill?
No, actually, well, if you wanted to have do-it-yourself crematorium, the landfill and a pit was the way to go. But yeah, that was the stories that took place. And I won't go into it here, but there was a eyewitness testimony. Well, I wouldn't say eyewitness testimony, but eyewitness related to me, it relayed to me that they saw the pits burning and the vehicles show up, dump them out. The pit was already burning when they showed up. So they would basically show up, the pit was on fire, they tossed the bodies in, and they buried them deep enough where they weren't going to get, you know, dug up and whatever the hell was left of them. So yeah, that was what was relayed to me. So and remember, back in in Kansas City, back in the time of mafia, well, not really the time, but the time that we're speaking of, Kansas City was the kind of the heart of the United States. You've got I-35, I-70 intersects in, and wherever the drop was to be made, a lot of stuff happened in Kansas City, just like stuff that would happen in Las Vegas. The money was brought back to, your bag handlers, your money was brought back to the families in Kansas City. That's where it was brought out. And then it was either kept in Kansas City or it was shipped out, like either to, Chicago, New York, so on from that point. But yeah, there's stuff that I'm working on, not only JFK, but also, mafia and, a lot of stuff that I connect on to with, Jimmy Hoffa. And also Frank Sheeran.
Interesting.
So, I know I spoke a little bit about it back at the November conference last year that we held, and I don't know if I'm going to be talking about it this November, just because I've got new stuff that I'm working on for that presentation that I just haven't had time to be able to get put, all together, because I like to go back and, make sure that my facts are correct, and that way I'm not speaking out of my ass. So yeah, eventually that PowerPoint will come out, and it may either be at the conference, or it may just be a spotlight that I do one night, which will be kind of weird to MC and also speak, but we'll see what happens with that.
Anyway, I thought I'd just fill that out, because you end up talking to so many different people and you don't really know their backgrounds. But I know a long time ago, over 30 years ago, we were talking about the umbrella and the possibility of an umbrella gun. And then I had, I stayed to answer all questions, and I had two military personnel come up to see me, and they go, would you like to have an umbrella gun? Because we can make one. Because we do have access to what they call the overhead flechette launcher, or whatever they call it. And so I said, And where would I use that? In my third hour class? To take out Jimmy on the third row, because I don't like what he's saying? And they started laughing at him. I'm sitting there going, no, I do not want an umbrella gun. But at the same time, I would like to see. I mean, I already know. I read and I can see what it is. But good God. And you end up with all different types of sometimes what I call crazy personnel or crazy talks with people. But then sometimes you go back and you go, I'm not sure how crazy this was. There was a movie put out called Conspiracy, and not the now in fact I take that back. It's called Conspiracy Theory, I believe. Mel Gibson. Do any of you remember that movie?
Yeah.
When I got to the movie, I was kind of interested to see what was going on. And for the first 5 minutes, I told my wife, I said, I'm getting up and out of here. I do not want to see what this is about. And then all of a sudden, they mentioned MK Ultra. And I looked at my wife and I go, do you know what MK Ultra is? And she says, no, but she goes, I guess we're going to have a lecture of an hour and a half right now. What MK Ultra is. And I said,
was this your first wife? Was your first wife?
Yeah, but I kind of send her to the burn pit. So anyway. but you know, I said, we're staying and watching the film. And, you know, the thing of it is, 2 days after that, I get a call from a guy that basically, he wants to come and talk to me, but he's coming in by bus. And he's a guy that has about 30 locks on his thermos. And I looked at him and I'm going, what is going on? My name is out there for about a couple weeks, and all of a sudden I get all these people coming out of the woodwork. So I kind of put those things aside, but every once in a while, you know, something will bring it back up. And you guys got me to tell those stories, and I hadn't even told Dave about the burn pits, but he and I were talking about that for a long time. So just a lot of crazy things happen.
Yes, they definitely do. Let's see.
Did we just get Bart on here?
Yeah, Bart's on here. How you doing, Bart?
Bart, thanks. It's been really busy. I had a job for 5 weeks. I've been in the hospital. I've been scanning.
Oh.
Scanning a lot. I scanned in so much Nosenko shit. Just unbelievable. Malcolm gave me a huge box. I mean, a huge box filled with folders. So I scanned them all in. There's a lot of stuff in there that isn't online, once again. So, and now I'm doing I'm seeing him on Wednesday, and I'm going to do another interview. I'm going to throw that on the YouTube as well. The first one's already on there, which I did about 6-7 weeks ago. There's an article on Malcolm coming out in Garrison. I'm about to submit that. Some good pictures with it as well that I all took while doing the whole process. And in Assassination Weekend, I'm going to release it. The first phase. I've got another year left because I had a good look at what I've got left. There's a fuckload left, and I'm not happy about that. So, because it just keeps going on and on and on. I've been doing this for 3 years, rock solid. As far as I'm concerned, you JFK researchers can all fuck off. I really regret getting involved in any of this shit. So that's my mindset right now. I was even scanning in the hospital while I was just sitting there waiting with the being on the drip as such. I'm going to take a break. I've got plenty of stuff that I went through and I've started to add to my papers already. I don't know when I'm going to finish the papers, but I am going to stop scanning for at least 2 or 3 months. And depending on the speed I finish my papers, because all 4 of them are going to be released, I don't know whether it's going to happen by Assassination Weekend, but it won't be much later after that. So maybe Christmas is my second aim. And then I'll probably pick the archive up again as well. So, but I now have finally got an idea of what I have left. A year ago, I didn't have a clue. And it's only with the last 2 visits that it's become clear of how much is left to do. And there's a considerable amount. But what I am going to do is work in the background and tidying everything up, because this was a, what you call a, the project that wasn't planned at all. And it just kept going on and on and on. It was supposed to be about a 6-month job, and now it's almost 3 years in October. And there's a lot of stuff. I've already said all this before, so I hope a lot of people will be able to use it, because the width of the research and the subjects as such are just almost everything. There isn't any real subject that's really missing inside that archive. So I need to tidy up a bit, and then the first phase is basically going to be released during assassination weekend. My estimate is that there's about 130,000 to 140,000 pages in there. So, and that's about probably about 15 to 16,000 PDF files. So that will give everyone food to play with and to look at and to read at and so forth. So, and then after that, once the new year, there'll probably be weekly updates for at least the first 6 to 9 months, because what I looked at what's left is quite a lot. So it's going to take me a full year to finish the whole thing off. So
How am I feeling?
Yeah, I'm all right. The thing with the hospital was just that I had a local infection, and that needed to be treated aggressively. So I was just inside the hospital having the finest gourmet food. And I would lay on a ward with three other half-dead clowns. I swear to God, all they did was sleep. So that room was practically mine. And
Related to the kind of health care you guys have in England there, with everyone gets universal health care?
Didn't cost me a cent, the whole thing.
But you had to wait a while, right?
And I walked out with 6 weeks of supplies of two types of antibiotics in pill form, loads of gauze for my foot, loads of tape, this, that, and the other. I just had two massive carrier bags full of stuff where you normally pay hundreds of dollars for, basically just given to me as such. If I ask them for more on something else, they'll give it to me. They don't care. So, yeah, and it's just all free. Plus, I called in beforehand, so I got seen relatively very quick. And they knew I was coming. So overall, yeah, it's all okay. So I felt great the next day already, because they just put you on four drips in every 24 hours. So, you know, it starts to work real quick. And, you know, everything's fine. So I did a bit of research. I've started to do bits of research. I've got a document from the HSCA. It's called a staff interview of James Hostey that is nowhere to be seen online anywhere. It's 82 pages of info that absolutely there's no info whatsoever about that document. So I'm really happy with that. Plus I went through, Hostey did 3 days interview with the church committee. So I've been looking into that as well. And that was very interesting, because he tells you in that, which was totaling 550 pages. So I had to go through these 550 pages basically to find the little tidbits that were dealing with the interrogations as such. There's loads of bits like that basically coming into my interrogation paper, because I found it at Malcolm, and that's why I basically paused as well, because the stuff is spread all over. You don't know what you're coming across. Every folder is different. And, you know, once in a while you come across a sheet of paper and you go, aha. So it was worthwhile waiting for it. But now that I've basically finished the warehouse collection, which is where Malcolm's old stuff was from Dallas, and the Cuban thing, and some early Washington stuff, but it was mostly all related towards the FBI and Secret Service, this, that, and the other. That's practically finished. And now what's left is basically all Malcolm's personal stuff. So it's going to be spook heaven, what's coming from, say, early next year. And probably Veciana, because now that I've finished Nosengo, Veciana's next. Massive collection as well.
Was there anything interesting in the Hostey material?
Well, to me it was because there was little details that he sat next to Fritz in the interrogation room, and just, you know, little tidbits like that that just helped me complete the picture of that particular interrogation. The thing is, he spoke in quite a few instances about the interrogation as such, so it was just really nice to be able to read through all that stuff and find these bits. So I put that, that's going to be out in my paper. There's all kinds of stuff. You know, there's a document that Lee Farley already posted years ago, but I came across it in Malcolm's archive. I didn't know that he had posted it at the Reopened Kennedy case. And that's a document that basically disowns William Scoggins completely, because he admits to the FBI that he couldn't recognize the man on the picture of Oswald as the guy who basically ran away from the Tippit murder as such. Yet, 3 days before that document, he basically picked him out in a lineup, allegedly. So, you know, things like that. I've just been sawing the legs of all these so-called tables bit by bit. I'm going to destroy the whole thing. So, yeah, but the thing is also, all four papers going to come out in one go. I don't know, going to do it separate, so that's a bit of a challenge. But especially the Prayer Man one, there still needs a fair bit of work. But the other three are, yeah, they're getting along. So, and then in the meantime, I'm just getting some interviews done. Whenever I go to Malcolm, I'm just going to sit him down for an hour, videotape him, and just ask loads of questions. You know, the first one was a really loose talk. The second one's going to be relatively loose as well. And then after that, we'll just go into the specifics. But without copying all the other work that's been previously done by Alan Dale, because everything is aimed at the archives, nothing else. Like the specifics of the CIA, this, that, and the other, you can read that about in the book, and also the interviews that are on YouTube as such. And then slowly I'm going to start basically also working on some of the articles that I've already got in draft mode. I've got a thing on the fingerprints. It's been done before, but the findings that I did are this whole new stuff, and it's just a massive clusterfuck that needs to be figured out and published as such, because there are a lot of inconsistencies and there are real issues with the evidence itself, how it was obtained. There is a really good example of souvenir hunting by, what's his name, Dusty Road, is that his name? Who wrote that book?
Yeah.
First Day Evidence?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Because I find, in that book, I find a copy of a card of inkless fingerprints. And of all the fingerprints I researched at the archives, this, that, and the other, that set is nowhere to be seen, nor at the University of North Texas, nowhere else, anywhere else. And when the fingerprint cards are being put on display by Captain Doughty and Pete Barnes, when they're in the corridor, and then basically start showing both sets, I find other inconsistencies. It only seems that there's only one card that's been reproduced for the FBI and the Secret Service that have gone into the archives as such. No other copies of the other cards have been forwarded as such. And there's quite a few other things that are just really hard to explain. So I'm in the middle of that. That will probably appear at some point next year. But And then Oswald's shirt is another thing I've already been published about, but there's some other bits that I've gathered. So same with the Heidel ID, that's gotten a bit more complicated, but nonetheless stays incredibly interesting, how this has been put together as such. And then the other thing is the Dallas police evidence as well. That's a clusterfuck of biblical proportions, I'm telling you. This is huge. What the DPD and what the FBI did with the rolls of film, allegedly, about the evidence, pictures of evidence that have disappeared, and so forth, dates that absolutely do not make any sense. Malcolm went through it 22 years ago, in 99, and in 99 he did an article, and he came up with six scenarios. He couldn't figure it out. So now I've got a stack of paper, which is, I'm not kidding, is about a good, yeah, it's a foot, almost a foot tall, which just deals with the evidence of the Dallas police and the FBI. It's an enigma. What happened in that? Just the stuff that the FBI made disappear.
So what do you, what comes out to mind if you want to share about some evidence that they made disappear? What can you remember?
Well, okay. Well, one thing is really, really simple. There's two things that are easy. It's the trail of development of the films and when they're coming back. So at some point, the DPD sends these films up. Then the FBI says, you don't have to do that. We'll take films. We'll take images and so forth. Then the FBI come in and say, there are 50-odd frames missing. Now, this is called a recorder camera. This is an idiot-proof thing. It's like, wind it, put the evidence underneath. Yeah, the camera's from the top. Press click, job done. Slide onto the next piece of evidence. Wind up the release. Bosh, job done. Next one. It was idiot proof. Malcolm's had one in his hands as well. He says that it doesn't make any sense that all of a sudden in the middle of a film there are 50 odd frames that are not exposed, that are just basically completely blanked out as such. So
now, are these pictures of Oswald's possessions?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. So they've been messing around with the stuff big time. FBI got hold of the evidence really quick as well. It was in the middle of the night, right after the press conference. They already walked out of it. They only apparently named, like, oh, we've got half a dozen things. Anyway, it took the whole lot. Had everything. So that by itself is, you know what? There's nothing that's straightforward in this case. But if you start looking and you just, you know, you find out the details and such, you just go, I can't believe they got away with it. But the only reason why they got away with it is because they hid all this stuff for so long. That's why. Had this stuff been released in the 70s, they would have just looked like, yeah, get another commission on the go, because this is so fishy. It's unbelievable.
There was no trial. There was no trial. This stuff would have come out during the trial.
Some of it, yeah.
You know, the chain of evidence would have the flaws would have come out when they would have challenged the admissibility of this evidence.
Number one reason why he was killed.
Yeah, that's why he was killed. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So I got lots going on. I'm just taking my time. But, yeah, I need a break from the scanning, because especially April till now has practically been full on. I also got to a point where I find very little Dallas evidence for my papers. So I just got to a point where I just put it together. I've got to transcribe some interviews, and which is also a great thing to do. And it's torture. Once I've done all that, then these papers are going out for release. What I'm going to do rightly after that, I'm not sure yet, but what I will do is I'm going to start making a few videos about this stuff that I've done. Because that's what actually these papers were intended for, to basically turn them into scripts of some sort where I basically just rattle off all the facts and have all the evidence concentrated together. So, and that'll probably be like 10-minute films. Really simple, unspecific.
That'll be great, because we're going to probably do another mock trial for the 60th. And to the extent that you can, provide some information about the broken chain of evidence and some of the...
Want to talk to Johnny Cairns about that. He's done a few talks about that, the chain of evidence and all that.
Johnny Cairns?
So, Johnny Cairns, C-A-I-R-N-S. If you look him up on Facebook, or I'll introduce you to him, and you really want to talk to him about this, because he's done it. And I think he's doing something similar in November on our Dealer Plaza UK Day seminar. So... he's the guy to talk to about that.
Cool, thanks.
No worries. So other than that, I don't have fuck all going on. So the beauty was that while I was on the job was so shit and there was fuck all going on. So I brought documents into the office, and I just brought my light with me. And they got their visa went. The guy went, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm just scanning documents in. I'm doing fuck all else, and I'm bored looking at YouTube." They had allowed, this is a large law firm, and they had allowed YouTube in there. So, but after a while, I get fucking bored with it, and I was like, "You know what? I'm gonna scan." So I did about 5,000 pages in 4 weeks. So I was like, "Yeah, not bad." So just keep on hammering. And then they realized, like, well, yeah, there is fuck all going on. Let's get rid of him. So the day I came out of the hospital, bosh, get the fuck out. So I was like, yeah, all right, whatever. So, but yeah, so I managed to keep scanning. And yeah, there's so much stuff. I hope everyone is going to check out the article in Garrison. It's going to, it's an article about what my experiences was with the archive. With doing it, what's in there, you know, there'll probably be some more specifics, but overall, it's from my point of view, how I did it, what I did do, and so forth. So, you know, in that aspect, when it comes to Malcolm Bond, it's a unique angle, and I'm not talking about all the stuff that he has done, this, that, and the other, and all the accolades, because Alan Dale's done it already a million times, so I was like, you know what, just focus on the archives and stick to that. It's about 3.5 pages of stuff and a load of pictures that I took during that whole journey so far. So, and I don't see this being finished for at least another year, so that would be it. Then I'm retiring from doing this. Swear to God, sick of it. So... The only reason why I'm doing this is because also the information is great. It doesn't matter what you're looking into. And, you know, whether it's Garrison or the Secret Service or, yeah, the FBI as well, and all that stuff. And there's just loads on New Orleans, Shaw, Ferry, Bannister, all that. There's tons of stuff. And, you know, if you're into this and you're interested in reading documents, I would look at it as a top-up of what you already know from the books and the research you've done yourself. That's what it is. That's what the Blunt Archive is. It's a top-up with extra information that will confirm what you've read before in better detail, and on top of that provides you nuggets of new information as such. That's the beauty of that archive, as far as I'm concerned. Well, Joe can attest for that, so he knows about certain things. So... I've been sending out this stuff to quite a few people. The Kennedys and King article as well from the Fair Play for Cuba committee. I gave them a fair bit of amount of documentation on the FPCC, and that helped him. And you know, it gets mentioned everywhere. So it's a good thing about it. People get access to this stuff and get able to go through it. That's number one priority. So I'm working hard on that. So. Probably, yeah, Assassination Week is going to be the primary release of the archive as such. And then after that, we'll see how long it takes to finish it. So that's my take on everything.
Well, thank you, Bart. And just so you know, I did finally figure out which hard drive that I had the Newcomb tapes on. I will be getting those to you probably this week, if not
soon. Great stuff, thanks.
Yeah, I'll definitely get that to you. And like Bart mentioned, Garrison Magazine, that he's writing the article for, I don't know if there's anybody that doesn't already know about Garrison, but S.T. Patrick runs Garrison Magazine. It's done through Lulu Press, and you can actually go to either Midnight Rider News website, which is a link on our website in the affiliated website list, or you can go to Lulu Press's website, and you can order the back issues if you missed one, or maybe if you missed them all. They have them in print, magazine form, and then you can also order the PDF and get it immediately as soon as you check out. So print is always about twice the amount of what the PDF cost is. But if you haven't had the opportunity to, you know, see what a lot of our fellow researchers, some of the people that's in the room, and it's
there's loads of stuff in there that's just filled to the brim. It's not just 20 pages, it's like 80 to 100 pages thick. It's got a glossy cover, and inside everything's black and white. And, you know, anyone who's anyone or ever done anything in this genre, history and so forth, has written for it or provided pictures and so forth. So,
this is a British issue about
6 months ago. And some of the DPUK members and also some of the members from the so-called, what's this called, the Whitechapel Society, about Jack the Ripper and all that, they were all contacted and they wrote historic articles on Richard III and Jack the Ripper itself and so forth. It's not just JFK, it's everything. It's MLK, RFK, Malcolm X, you know, all this stuff is basically all in there, spread all over the magazine.
Yeah, and there's a lot of great articles, and I know... last year, I know me and Casey and Brian did one where we had our back-to-back articles together, and lots of great photographs, well-written articles. It's basically, you know, what we had years ago in the third and fourth decade. Now we have the Garrison Magazine, which is the place where not only do you have JFK, but you also, like Bart said, you have other topics. Anything from, you know, the three assassinations to even Watergate. There's been some articles in there, and I know he always does something, or at least he was doing something on Africa. So, yeah, definitely, like I say, lulupress.com or Midnight Rider News. And if you are a researcher and you would like to submit an article for the magazine, you know, he will usually take a, I've never seen him turn down anything, at least on my behalf, but, you know, great place to, submit your work and your, theses and, articles that you've written.
Just, that reminds me of, you mentioned Watergate, Woody Harrelson from Cheers is in Albany, New York and filming, doing a movie about Watergate. And, within the last week. There's an old New York State Education Building, which is across from the state capitol. There's a lot of columns in front of it, white steps, and it looks like a building you would see in Washington, D.C. So they're using that exterior for something to look like it's Washington, D.C. But he's been in town for most of the summer filming something about a movie about Watergate. So that'll come out in a year or two. But that was just odd that he was here doing that.
Well, let me say something about S.T. Patrick. He's told me this year that when this issue comes out, it'll probably weigh a ton because what Bart is saying, the number of articles and then the number of pages per article are going to be pretty well filled up. It's probably going to look like an annual or something, but at the same time, it's all supposed to be on JFK, and I'm looking for a lot of really good articles in there, and I think Ed Patro is going to put out one on Jack Ruby, and so a lot of good information comes out of that, and we really respect S.T. Patrick for putting this publication out, along with, I do want to mention again Russ Baker for all the work that he has done to publish these things, and then all of the people who have done tremendous amounts of work of going through archival material, and that's Joe Backus, and that's, you know, the idea that Bart Camp and all these guys that spend a tremendous amount of time that give people like us an opportunity to read these, hash through them, and then come up with any of the theories that we think are floatable on any type of water and type of situation. But it's good material and a good opportunity to read some good, really good archival material and research. So thank you guys for doing that.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, anybody else want to say anything while we're...
Yeah, David. Hi, it's Neil Safdie. Hi, good evening. Can I ask a couple of questions? I did actually bring this up before. How are you getting on with uploading the presentations from the November seminar last year, and also the spring one that you did this year.
The November one is close to being done completely now. The spring one is probably about halfway finished. Once those are done, like I don't know if I mentioned it at the last meeting, obviously they're going to be available on USB flash drive. I'm not for sure if I'm going to put them on Vimeo, so that way it would definitely save on shipping costs, especially overseas.
Sure.
They'll either be on like a Vimeo platform or something where even if I have to do the route of Google Drive again, which some of our stuff's available on that. But yeah, as soon as they're completely finished, and I am kind of a perfectionist, especially with Zoom, and I've explained this to a few people. The reason why it's taken so long to get them done is because when I film in person, you're filming, basically 1 hour presentations, individual files. Mm-hmm. When you start a Zoom recording, like say for the national, for the conference that we just, did this last two conferences, when I start like 8 o'clock in the morning, we don't finish until 6. You're talking about an incredible size of a video file when you're trying to break that apart in order to keep the voice and, the mouth or the slide presentation in order, keeping it, tracking correctly. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you've got to basically split everything apart. You've got to split the speaker, the voice, and the presentation. So you're trying to link that was the biggest problem that I had with, starting out doing, because, when I first started doing Zoom with the conferences in November of last year, it was a learning curve to make sure that everything, looked correctly. Because even after I went back and looked at the final video, I said, they're going, okay, there's, even sometimes it's up to even a minute delay, and then people would get lost in the presentation. So that's why I went back. I went with a new software for video editing, just strictly for doing, the Zoom conferences. But I'm hoping that everything will be done, available before this November, before we do our next conference, November 13th and 14th. So just so it's done, though, there'll be a big announcement on the website, and then it'll show how to, how you want to access it and get a copy.
Okay. No, that's fair enough. It sounds like it's a horrendous thinking nightmare, basically.
Yeah, I'll admit I miss being in person. Main thing, I miss being in person, not only the camaraderie. I mean, we have that here, obviously, but also sure. The fact of it's a whole hell of a lot easier when you're putting the, the films and the presentations together. It's just easier than going through taking a, 10-hour video that's, several gigs, and breaking that up into individual files. So.
Mm. Well, I think that's fair enough. And the second question, I know we've lost about a third of our researchers, some eminent ones. This is an open couple of questions. Does anybody know where I could get hold of either a hard copy of the Pope telephone directory for Dallas around 63 or 64? All I've managed to get hold of so far is a 61 directory from the Texas History Portal, but obviously I'd like something more current than that. And secondly, has anybody here interviewed Adrian Hamby, or does anybody know if he's still alive?
Well, as far as your
that's to everybody.
Okay, well, as far as your first question, a directory, yeah, Texas Portal is a good one, but also I know when me and Brian went to the Dallas Public Library, the stuff that they have, that's a good source to go to, and I can't remember for the life of me at the moment what her name was, but I was on a panel with her at CAFA back in 2019, and that would be a good opportunity, maybe reach out to her at the Dallas City Public Library and see if they have something in their back room.
I was actually at CAFA in 2019. I do recall that panel. So I'll look at the itinerary for that. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I would say check that out, and if I can, what I'll do, I'll get you a name and number, and I'll email it to you, and see if by chance they may have something still.
Yeah. Okay, that'd be great. It's just I can't find it anywhere. That's a critical year.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, and the 61 directory is pretty relevant. I mean, obviously there is some overlap in businesses and residences, but it's not the real ticket, you know. Okay. And Adrian Hamby, anybody interviewed him? Anybody know if he's alive? I mean, he's still reasonably young because he was a teenager.
Refresh for our memory, who was he?
He was the guy that ran into the library, the whole library fiasco at Jefferson and Marsalis.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that, because I'm working on a chronology, a bit like Brooks, actually, between 1230 and 2. And I'm trying to pin down all the various actors, good and bad, both law enforcement and press, / cameraman, etc. And I'm really trying to get this chronology right. And he will be a great guy to interview. There's a bit of a disconnect between what Myers says and what Lieutenant Cunningham says, who I think Bill simply thinks is a bad actor.
Elmo.
Sorry?
Elmo.
Yeah, Elmo Cunningham. That's right, yeah. And so I just wondered if anybody's come across him. Is he still alive?
Well, I tell you what, I see that Gary's not in the room right now, but let me call Gary Shaw and see if by chance he might have any information. Have you asked Bill Simpage by chance?
No, I'm in contact with Bill, and I did ask Gary when he presented at DP UK, but we haven't followed up with Gary. To be honest with you, a guy I'm working with has just moved to Dallas, and he's getting his shit together. Funny enough, he works at Parkland, but I know. And he knows Gary as well from the various conferences that he's attended in Dallas. So we do intend to chase up Gary at some point. But I think there's so many things we want to pick his brains on. I think we just got to make sure we prioritize, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Well, sometimes he's the keeper of the secrets of, as far as information goes, just with the fact of just the vast amount of knowledge that he does have.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's usually my go. If I get a strange request or question, he's usually the one I go to first.
Do you know, David, any other eminent researchers that are Dallas-based? I mean, I know Jeff Meek. I've spoken to Jeff. Who's north of Dallas. Does anybody else know anybody that's still in that area?
Matt Dalvit is in Dallas.
Sorry, excuse me?
Matt Dalvit, he's in Dallas.
Okay, Bart.
In Dallas.
All right, we can talk about that offline, I guess. Okay. Well, thank you, David.
Yeah, no problem, Neil. Thank you. Well, I see that we're coming up on the 3-hour mark here pretty quick. So I think we'll probably bring this one here to close, but I want to close with some closing information. Number one, thank you to everybody that's still hanging in there with us and everybody that appeared today. Of course, the replay will be on the website and on YouTube later this afternoon or early in the morning. And for you guys over across the pond, it'll be there by the time you wake up. But again, obviously, we do have another event coming up in 4 days. Professor David Denton from Olney Central College. Hold on just a second, Bart, I'll get to you. He's going to give his presentation this Wednesday night from 6 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, or Central Daylight Time, whichever way you want to call it. But you can click on the event tab on the event tab on the projectjfk.com website and get your e-ticket for that. I know he's going to have great information and also a great presentation that he's going to present. He's been working on this. I know he's put an article in Garrison, and I believe this is what he's been working on for the last couple of years. So I want to make sure we have a good full audience for him to have at the Spotlight Series. So if you haven't already gotten your ticket, please do. Also, again, if anyone would like to donate to Pride of JFK's website, you can always go on to prideofjfk.com on the homepage, click on the PayPal button, and make a donation. And Bart, did you want to add one more thing?
Yeah, no, I forgot what I was going to say. So, oh yeah, you know, I tell you what, from across us lot from across the pond, it starts so fucking late, man. It starts at 11 o'clock our time. So last week as well, or when you had Bill Simpich on, I had to get up at 5 a.m. I was like, well, you know, I like to listen to Bill, but fuck that. So I just had to say, no, it's too late for my liking, you know. So, but I understand that you guys have to wait for people to come back from work and all that malarkey. But
actually, it started even later than that. It's impossible for us to see it concurrently. It's just too late. But can I just say, I mean, I did go back and replay Bill Simpich's presentation and his docs and so forth. What a brilliant format that was. Fantastic format. Well done.
Well, yeah, and also the fact that we had tried something obvious. I mean, the first one came off with a bang, the John Newman presentation that was only scheduled for one night, which we ran into two nights concurrently. You know, that was a great way to kick off the Spotlight series. And then when I brought Bill in for the second episode, you know, he had told me that he had, you know, some virtual handouts. And I'm sitting there going, virtual handouts? That's a hell of an idea, because when we've been at conferences, you know, there's been speakers that will pass out, you know, stapled packets of information to conference attendees. And I said, you know what, we can do the exact same thing virtually by putting it on the website. You know, obviously, if we can get it ahead, the idea was to get it on there ahead of time so people can look at it. And then they could form questions, you know, as he's doing the 20-minute segments. And I know when we do, you know, the journey meetings, there's not much for handouts. That's why we've got the chat log where you can go and search links. And Bart, you've been really great at, you know, putting in, you know, places to get information from. And even in the chat log, even though the blue link doesn't show up, you can still highlight that link. And most of them are always active. But I know when Bill came up with that idea of virtual handouts, I said, yeah, that's the way we're going to start. Anytime we have a speaker, that's the way I want to do it, just because, you know, it makes it more personable, more interactive, and a great way to share information. So we'll be doing that during the Spotlight meetings and also, during our global conferences, going forward. So that way, it's kind of that little extra.
So just a request, David, for your next Spotlight series, get someone from the Eastern Seaboard with you. At least you can attend live.
Well, yeah. I tell you what, I know that I know me and Bart, we've already talked about it, and when he wants to do it, I said, well, obviously, you know, to give Bart as much time as he wants, I said, you know, and that's one thing I do about this. I know the three Spotlights so far has been planned on Wednesday nights instead of on a Saturday. I like Saturday personally, just because, you know, you can schedule midday. You guys can attend. You know, also the people in the United States can attend. But I know that, you know, I kind of leave it up to when the speaker is available. And, sure. You know, kind of go from that. But, you know, the ones that take more than 3 hours, then yeah, those are the ones we schedule for a Saturday, so we can go just as hell and go as long as they want to. But yeah, we'll keep up the work on that.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you,
David. This is Bob from New York. I run an international conference on another topic. Been running it for a couple of years now, and it's not rocket science here. But after surveys and conversations like this, we chose noon Eastern time, whether daylight or standard, as our event starting time. And it works great in the UK, great in Europe. Actually, for some people in Australia, works okay. Even those who are in the Middle East who join, and like places like even Singapore, it's, you know, midnight or so. So when we tried to find that optimum thing that would serve everybody's needs, 12 noon Eastern, seem to be the sweet spot, and that's 1600 or 1700 UTC. And because daylight time changes in different parts of the country at different dates of the year. So just thought I would offer that. You probably are already aware of this. I'm sure you thought it through, but.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, that's great information, Bob. I know, that's like with the Spotlight series, you know, the Journey Meeting, I didn't want to do it on a Sunday because, you know, some people go to church and obviously we've got, you know, football, going on, go Chiefs.
you know, I went
to run back to the Super Bowl third time in a row. That'd be great. But yeah, that's why shows like, you know, 1 o'clock Central, which I don't know. I guess that's, well, it's either 12 or 2 Eastern. But you know, that way it doesn't tie up your whole day. You can get some stuff done beforehand, and then you've got your evening available to you. So
just so you know, I went down that rabbit hole of sports. You know, there's three things that factor into weekends: family time, faith-based activities, and sporting events. And so I explored the sporting events, and I decided to go with our events on Sunday, impacting professional football, because I got such a backlash from people who were fanatic about college football. So you can't win. There's no win. It's the ultimate in compromise, even probably more intense than political compromise.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one reason why, you know, I thought of doing the replays on the website and on YouTube, just because, you know, like you guys over, you know, in the UK, at least if you do miss out, I try to make it available within, you know, 12 hours or less of the actual event. I know that kind of sucks as far as if you have questions that you want to ask. But what's nice about it, you can always submit the questions to prodigyfk@yahoo.com. And then I will forward them to the speaker with your contact so they can get back to you. And then we're more than welcome to, you know, add an addition to a chat log if it's something that, you know, wants to be added to it. So, but other than that, I think we're going to go ahead and bring this one to a close. Again, I hope to see everybody Wednesday night for Professor David Denton's presentation and Spotlight Series. And other than that, keep up the work, keep up the research, and we will see you again at another time.
Yeah. Thank you, David.
Everybody, stay healthy and keep working.
Call the White House.
And yes, call the White House. And again, the number is in the chat log, and I'm going to give it again. The number is 202-456-1414.
Yes.
And Bill says to start calling on Monday after the weekend. So,
yeah.
And again, save the date, November 13th, 14th. This year, that's going to be our next global conference. It's the weekend before Assassination Weekend, where everybody else is having theirs. So you get to join us and see ours first, and hopefully we'll be cheaper. But just because the price is cheaper doesn't mean the quality is going to be cheap. So definitely keep that in mind, and more details will be coming out on the website, and then you'll also get an email with it too. So, all right, guys, have a great rest of the weekend, and we'll see you Wednesday night.
Thank you.